Hey, Rick. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Cinco de Mayo part of the Fish and Game Commission. I hope it's as festive as that as this day should be. Probably not, but anyway, it was an idea. I'm Richard Rogers, Vice President of the Commission. I'm standing in for Jim Kellogg, who is the President of the Commission, but not here and away on business. Sitting two over from me to my left is Michael Sutton from Monterey. And one from him is Jack Bayless from Los Angeles, a local guy. Sitting immediately next to me is John Fisher, who is acting executive director of the commission. Immediately to my right is Adriana Shea, who's deputy executive director. Rick Thalheimer, to her right, is deputy attorney general. Sonke Mastrup. Sitting over there is Deputy Director of the Department. We have Warden Kyle Chang in the back. And here from our staff is Sherry Fonbuena and Carol Horn. And John, take it away.
Thank you. Before we get started, a couple of housekeeping items. Restrooms are directly outside these doors here. There is a restaurant down the hall to my left, your right, as you're facing me. This meeting is being conducted under the provisions of the Begley-Keene Open Meetings Act. We encourage you to be involved in the meeting and to speak. And to do that, we ask that you fill out one of these green speaker cards and hand it to our staff up here on my right or your left. And when you fill out that card, please put the agenda item number of the item that you wish to speak to. The speaking time today will be 3 minutes per individual, maximum of 10 minutes aggregate. And if you have somebody to cede time for you, we can make arrangements for that. a couple of other things. Yesterday we had our first experiment trying to do some Skype work to bring in a department presentation from the Department of Fish and Game in Sacramento. That tended to work well. And in terms of background on this, I think most of you may be aware, some of you probably not, that the governor has an executive order dealing with budget problems, and that's affecting travel pretty dramatically. So there are two Department of Fish and Game people here for this meeting in response to the governor's executive order. And part of our solution to that is to try to Skype people in. And so we're going to be trying to do that again today. It's my understanding that we've got a location in Eureka that we're going to be doing a presentation on. And so there might be some minor technical difficulties, and you'll just have to bear with us when we get to that. However, I must say it went pretty well yesterday. And in terms of other housekeeping announcements, these meetings are all recorded and cast over the web. So be aware of that what you say can be heard by perhaps classroom children who might be watching how government's working and things like that. Be aware of that. And you know, we're going to treat you respectfully. We ask that you treat each other respectfully, too, on that. We will not have an executive session today unless something happens unusual. We will report results of our executive session. So basically, that's the housekeeping items. We will start with public forum, continuation of public forum, which is number 12 on the agenda.
Before we get to that, let me say one thing, that's sort of a housekeeping thing. We apologize for the for what is probably going to become an awkward meeting schedule for us going forward. Because of the budget constraints and the travel constraints that John mentioned, we're probably going to be conducting quite a few of our meetings in or around Sacramento. We fully realize, and as you know, it has always been our practice to conduct meetings out in the field and throughout the state in locations where the issues about which we are acting are particularly salient or relevant to those particular areas. We are going to be constrained going forward in our ability to do that. We fully understand that it would be infinitely better for us to be in locations that are the ones that are affected off of our agenda, the extent to which possible. We are absolutely constrained now by the budget problems. So our apologies to those who have been inconvenienced by this and will be inconvenienced in the future, but there's literally nothing we can do about that.
Okay, so continuing in public forum, we have Evelyn Meister, Mark Kraus, and Carrie Chitwood. There'll be 3 minutes. When I call your name, please come up to the front. One other thing that I need to talk about in terms of procedures, if you have handouts for the commission, please give them to our staff up here on the right when we call your name, and we'll distribute them to the commissioners as you speak. Second thing, if you have a PowerPoint presentation or anything like that, please give it to the AGP folks in the back of the room. I'm not seeing a response to Evelyn Meister, Wild Haven Ranch. Please come up.
Good morning. I am Evelyn Meister.
Ms. Meister, I'm sorry. Would you raise the microphone up a little bit just so that, thank you.
Does that do it?
It did.
That
thank you very
like
much.
Sounding. On behalf of myself and my family, my friends, my neighbors who can't be here today, I would like to let each of you know that there are many people who support Diane Williams and Roger Williams and their efforts and their achievements at Wild Haven Ranch. Wild Haven Ranch is, for me, a family affair. It began in 2004 when my grandson became involved through his school. It spilled over to my adult daughter, to my husband, who is here today, and to me. We have been involved ever since that time. It was my privilege to accept a board position in 2005, and I still serve in this position. As a board member, I would like to state that the board fully supports Diane and Roger. We have complete confidence in them. They conduct themselves with integrity, and Wild Haven Ranch is operated in a professional manner. The welfare of the indigenous wildlife is the primary concern. Diane and Roger have been completely committed to the importance of rehabilitating and releasing the native animals back to the wild. Every dollar that is brought into Wild Haven is used strictly for the needs of the animals. Thorough training is conducted, and Diane demands strict adherence by everyone on the facility in following all the known rules and regulations of the Department of Fish and Game and the other appropriate agencies. Additionally, I'd like to note that the majority of our employees and our volunteers stand behind Diane and Roger. We also have a committed group, both on and off the mountain, of individuals, families, and businesses who, because they are passionate about the San Bernardino Mountain ecosystem and the importance of the role played by the native wildlife, they provide extended support to Diane and Roger and to the needs of Wild Haven. In closing, I'd like to thank each of you for letting me be here today and for taking the time to listen, and I sincerely hope and trust that you will take these statements into account. Thank you.
Thank you for taking your time to let us know that. I want to make sure that everyone in the public understands that there is an appeals hearing on this subject that Ms. Meister is bringing up on the 17th of May, Office of Administrative Hearings. And so that is an important thing for anyone who is interested in this subject to be there. Thank you.
Mark Krauss, followed by Carrie Chitwood.
Thank you, Vice President Rogers, Mark Krauss, and Commissioners. Mark Krauss on behalf of Pacific Gas and Electric Company. Just wanted to update you briefly, or inform you briefly. I think you've got a letter in your packet that PG&E sent on behalf of our Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant near Avila Beach on the Central Coast. And Diablo Canyon is a result of a 2006 legislation, AB 1632. The Energy Commission was required to study the state's electric grid vulnerability due to any major seismic event. PG&E's had a 30-year program on seismic research, but as part of that study, what the CEC decided was that three-dimensional seismic surveys were probably appropriate to get better definition of the seismic picture offshore of Diablo Canyon. And so the company's underway with trying to get permitting for that. In the course of that work, one of our consultants had spoken with commission staff and believed originally that it might be necessary to amend regulations related to the local marine protected areas. But I think with a better understanding and after speaking with Sankey, I think that this may be able to be something we can do through collection permits. So possibly not the 3 or 4 month period that Adriana described to try to do commission regulations of amendments, amendments or regulations rather. Just briefly, this work involves ships going near shore and setting off air cannons that, I mean, if you're familiar with the process from oil exploration, it's basically the same process. We'd also like to place some ocean bottom seismometers, some for only 2 weeks, some for as much as 5 years. So that's the work. There would be some cabling involved, and I've spoken with Sankey. That may be one of the challenges. But we'll work with the department on this, mainly because we'd sent a letter. I wanted to appear before you and explain that we're now going to work with the department and just looking for any expediting of the permitting process due to, of course, the public concern after Fukushima. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Krauss.
Question.
Sankey, please, go ahead.
Yep, we were probably going to ask the same question. Two questions. Mark, as a resident of the Central Coast, I've been dying to ask this of someone, and you're the first PG&E official. But how far above the ocean is the reactor or the reactor building?
That's actually, I'm one of the guys that has to answer those questions.
Canyon?
Yeah. So we are above 100 feet. Now, when you say the reactor, the power block sits at 120. It's well above 100 feet. So in terms of tsunami exposure, the power block is very well situated. I think the controlling feature at Diablo Canyon would be at the intake, which is where we get our cooling water.
Yeah.
We've built a cove there that's designed essentially to try to keep the major waves and things from causing damage. We have snorkels that rise 45 feet above sea level. And so, you know, a 20-foot tsunami, any of those, I mean, really a 40-foot tsunami, the plant would continue to receive ocean water. Right. So we also have backup water on the hillside there. There's a huge cooling pool that could take us through 7 days, and that's without any power at all. But we also have backup generation. So.
Right. Sankey, I guess another question for you. My understanding is that within a state marine reserve, as opposed to any other MPA designation, collecting permits can't be issued by the state. Is that correct? I mean, we had this problem in Southern California with the...
No, that's actually not correct.
Okay.
The Marine Life Protection Act very explicitly recognized scientific research and put monitoring as a provision that could be allowed even in reserves. Mm-hmm. And if you remember at one of the MRC meetings, Maria Vojkovich, we are now in the position of having to issue scientific... You know, people are wanting to do research, some of which involves take under our definition of take, which includes disturbance. And so Maria, Marine Region, had identified criteria that were under which we would consider allowing scientific research that involves collecting to occur in reserves. And it's and fundamentally it's necessity. In other words, does it have to occur here because we prefer it not be in a reserve? And if it is a necessity, we want to see some bona fide research and outputs and minimize those impacts. So one of the things we're going to do with PG&E is sit down and kind of better understand what kind of take might be involved. Yeah. And if you'd like, we could report back to you on what that might look like. But the department has regulatory discretion to issue take permits even in reserves. So that's something – that's why we came to you at the MRC to talk about it, because we've got some tentative policy guidelines, but – that's something you may ultimately want to look at more closely.
No, thanks for that explanation. I was thinking this was similar to the controversy that the sanitation districts went through in Southern California, where they couldn't maintain their infrastructure in a state marine reserve.
Yeah, see, that's not research. That's why we ran into that pickle. That's infrastructure and maintenance, which is not permitted in reserves. So that's kind of the nuance there.
Yeah. I would only point out that the take that we contemplate would be harassment, largely. But yeah. Thank you very much.
Sankey, yes, I think the commission would be interested in a report back from you guys with respect to what you're contemplating.
Gladly.
The reason I say that is that this entire subject, even before the Japanese event, is very sensitive. It's particularly sensitive to people who live in San Luis Obispo County, but it's in general a very sensitive issue, and I think we should air what we're doing in and around Diablo Canyon for any reason whatsoever.
Those of us who live on the Central Coast are highly motivated to prevent a nuclear take.
Yes. I can understand, even for those of you who are, pardon the expression, upstream. So, thank you, Mr. Krause. I might point out that it is very helpful for us to get to see you and know who you are. As in all governmental agencies and bodies, the more we see people, the better we can get to understand them. It's a good thing you're here.
Kerry Chitwood, Evan Salve, Leo Protopapadakis.
Good morning. I'm here to support fair legalization in California. I'm aware that the ERR report has been submitted, and it's my hope that it be reviewed soon. In October 1996, the California Department of Fish and Game mailed a survey questionnaire to each state wildlife agency in the nation to obtain legal and natural history information regarding domesticated ferrets. All state wildlife agencies, including California, were polled. 25 states have classified the ferret as a domesticated animal, and only two states, one which is California, have called them a wild animal. The survey also polled, are ferrets being bred in the wild? No state reported documented breeding by ferrets in the wild. Although the court case Wright versus the Fish and Game Commission, the commission heard evidence that there were problems with feral populations of ferrets in Massachusetts, Washington, and there was also wild ferrets living in Placer County, California. This seems to be a direct conflict with the survey conducted by the State of California Department of Fish and Game. The ferret sightings that I am aware of so far have been wild weasels. The DFG seems to base most of its case on the New Zealand 1880s, where they released wild ferrets into the ecosystem. This was a little bit strange because they released them to control rabbits. Rabbits were another species that was not native to New Zealand. So let's take an example here. We have a mice problem here. We release cats. Sooner or later, we have a cat problem. We release dogs. Sooner or later, we have a dog problem. We release elephants. What do we do then? Release the mice again? The 200,000 to 500,000 ferrets in California are spayed and neutered, and I'm still trying to figure out how it can be possible to mate and reproduce. The other argument against ferrets in California is that there's no known rabies vaccination, although we do have a USDA-approved rabies vaccination for ferrets, namely the IMRAP-3 by Rhone Moreau. There has never been the transmission of rabies from ferret to human reported in the United States. Let me remind you this quote straight from the CA.gov DFG site. The commissioner's ultimate decisions must reflect not only the biological needs of our fish and wildlife, but also the wishes, needs, and desires of all those who enjoy these resources. I would like to thank the commission for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chitwood.
Evan Salve, Leah Proto Papadakis, Bart Carlton.
Sorry. How you guys doing today? My name's Evan Salve. I'm a competitive saltwater bass angler, a pro staffer for a variety of saltwater tackle manufacturers, and an avid advocate of conservation and catch and release. A little bit about myself. I grew up fishing for saltwater bass off our coast. It was kind of my introduction to the saltwater bass fishing world, and therefore I have a very strong kind of love for the species. You know, kind of the issue that I'm going to be talking about today is the fact that saltwater bass, spotted bay bass, calico bass, and sand bass are in decline. You know, whether or not you guys are seeing it, I don't know, but I spend 75 days a year on the water, and, you know, I've seen it. I've seen what the sport boats are doing. Unnecessary amounts of take. I've seen what certain private boaters are doing, and quite frankly, I think it's time that we address the bag limits, that we enact possibly a slot limit, and that we really take some steps towards conserving a species that is vital to not only, you know, saltwater anglers such as myself, my friends who are in school right now and can't be here to talk, and really the saltwater bass fishing community as a whole, but also the economy. You know, saltwater bass fishing is a kind of a true sport, all right? It's not a commercial thing. It's like freshwater bass fishing. So, you know, you got a lot of tackle manufacturers who make products specifically designed to catch them. So it's very valuable to the economy. Kind of the solution that I'm kind of going to advocate, and I'd like you guys to possibly kind of look more into, and it's a solution that a lot of people really want to pursue, is reduced bag limits. Currently, it's 10. It's unnecessary. It's too high. Is there any way we can really look into bringing it down to 5, maybe even less? Also, slot limits. You don't need to keep a 10-pound bass. You don't need to keep a 3-pound spotted bay bass. It's unnecessary. Those are the breeders. Those are the fish that are ultimately going to contribute to the continuation of the species as a whole. So can we enact a slot limit to limit the take of those larger individuals? And also the smaller individuals, the fish that aren't having a chance to get, you know, multiple spawning years in. I'm talking about the 12-inch fish. You know, the fish that as soon as they hit 12 inches, they're going into the sacks, they're being harvested. So I just really want to encourage everybody, you know, the fishing game, the biologists, to really take a closer look into this. You know, I'm a young angler. I really want to take advantage of the species for many years to come. I really care about it, and quite frankly, a lot of people do, and a lot of people really want to see the change. It's necessary. Everybody wants it, please, for the continuation of sport fishing as a whole, and for the young anglers who, like I said, are in school and can't be here to state their opinions, please, please consider changing that. Thank you. Thank you for your time, and thank you guys for everything that you do.
Thank you for your remarks, Mr. Salve. Mr. Commissioner Sutton.
Evan, don't go anywhere. Thank you so much for being here and for your articulate testimony. It's really good to see a young angler with a conservation ethic like yours.
Thank you.
So congratulations on that. Interestingly enough, the issue you mentioned, we took up at a Marine Resources Committee meeting of the commission several months ago in Santa Barbara. The commission has, by statute, a Marine Resources Committee that Commissioner Rogers and I co-chair. It meets periodically, every couple of months, and we take up marine-related issues in more depth than is possible here at the full commission meetings.
I understand.
When we took up this issue in Santa Barbara, we had a presentation on the status of saltwater bass from a scientist at Scripps Institute of Oceanography, and he echoed your concern, frankly, as a scientist, that we are hitting these species too hard, primarily party boats and so forth operating in Southern California, and that the status of the species is becoming of concern. Mm-hmm. So your concerns are right on target. We are looking at that. The department was present at that presentation and is working with the scientific community to get a better handle on the status of the species in question. And we are looking at options for management, such as the ones that you mentioned,
yeah.
Slot limits, bag limits, and so forth.
May I add one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot is, you know, especially like with spotted bay bass, you know, there's really no sport boat pressure. There's no commercial value to the species other than the sporting anglers,
right.
You know, who fish the bay and stuff. So, you know, especially with a species like that, where really its value on the food table is far less than its value, you know, in the harbors alive swimming, you know, it's really, I think it's important, too, to really look at the species and say what's more valuable, the fish are alive or dead.
You certainly have allies up here. Commissioner Rogers and I are avid fly fishermen. We practice catch and release for everything that we do, saltwater and freshwater. And I think that's the trend in tournaments, in most angling is becoming. There's a very distinct trend toward catch and release.
Thank you very much. I might add a little personal commentary. I'm very, very glad to see a younger, articulate person come to the microphone. You're quite articulate. Let me shock you a little bit. I started seriously angling for various bass in the 1940s. I was raised in Newport Beach and spent my summers in Catalina. Mm-hmm. I have my sense of what is going on with respect to various types of kelp bass is precisely yours, but I start at an index where they were much bigger than they are now.
Yeah.
I mean much bigger than they are now. So my angst with respect to this issue is even more acute than yours, because I may be 70, but those first few kelp bass that I caught are etched in my mental cortex just as much as the ones that you caught yesterday. So I'm right with you on this subject.
Yeah, and, you know, I worked at Catalina. I worked on a charter boat out there for one summer. But I also grew up fishing sport boats, so I kind of saw the effects firsthand. You know, on the front side of Catalina, it has a tremendous population of smaller fish. But the reason for that is not because, you know, that they're limited by the environment around them. There's the potential for just stellar populations of big fish. But because in the summer, it's just so much sport boat pressure, so much private boat pressure, that the minute those fish hit 12 inches, you know, they're going into the sacks, so they're just not getting a chance.
We know, Mr. Salvi, and thank you very much for
your
comments.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Commissioners, later on today in your agenda, you have an agenda item which will begin the sport fishing regulatory package, and I don't know if what I'm hearing is a suggestion to perhaps add it to that, and I also don't know, Sankey, how easily that could be done, but that is on your agenda, and so I just want to draw that to your attention.
I'd like to hear what Sankey has to say about that.
Yes, Commissioners, agenda item 21 on consent contains a suite of proposed regulation changes to sport fishing. This is essentially the start of a sport fishing cycle, so this would be an appropriate vehicle to make a change if the commission feels they're ready to look at addressing a change to the spotted bass regs.
I take it that is the consensus of the commissioners here? Commissioner Bayless, you're kind of along with that one? Yes, that is our consensus, Shonky. Thank you. And when we get to 21, we'll...
All right, so, yeah, we'll have to pull that off consent and have a discussion on that then.
That's fine.
All right.
Got that, John?
One more comment.
Please go ahead.
Shonky, our marine advisor worked closely with the scientists who are studying these species at Scripps might have some suggestions. I know we went through at the Marine Resource Committee meeting a number of option management options. I think you were there. So
during our discussion, since we are going to pull 21 off of consent, during our discussion when we get to that, Dr. Schumann can weigh in with his input, the extent to which he feels comfortable doing so at this early date. Thank you. John?
Leah, followed by Bert Carlton, followed by Roger Williams, and Mark, I think it's Mark Maxix. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Leah Protopapadakis with the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. That was a really tough act to follow. Vice President Rogers, commissioners, thank you for hearing my comments today regarding MPA implementation in the South Coast. First, briefly, the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission is a non-regulatory state agency charged with improving water quality, rehabilitating natural resources, and protecting the bay's benefit and values. We are the local partners of the Department of Fish and Game in the management and restoration of the Biona wetlands. We still welcome you guys out for a tour anytime you're in the area. And we're also partnering with Department and NOAA on an abalone restoration study, and are collaborating with the National Marine Fisheries Service on mapping offshore eelgrass beds in Southern California. I was very pleased to hear yesterday that the department anticipates submitting the final South Coast MPA regulations to the commission staff in the next few weeks. While there are many good reasons for timely implementation, and I understand that you heard several yesterday, from SMBRC's perspective, what we really need is the certainty of a firm and final start date for these MPAs. As businessmen, you will appreciate the need for certainty in planning and for decision making. For example, our boater education program has the capacity to reach tens of thousands of Southern California boaters with information from the department about MPAs, but we cannot incorporate any information into our outreach material because of the potential cost of reprints until we have that start date. While I may differ with commercial fishermen on when I would like the start date to occur, I would also wager that they too would benefit from having a firm start date so that they could plan accordingly. And also, an implementation date will, as it gets later and later, will also have consequences for the MPA monitoring. Currently, as I understand it, the Ocean Protection Council has granted California Sea Grant with money for baseline South Coast MPA monitoring. It's being distributed through a competitive bid process. Those applications or proposals have already been submitted and they're currently under review. The grant requires all monitoring projects to be completed by March of 2014, which just allows for a little over 2 years of data collection. In most cases, 2 years is barely adequate to assess baseline conditions. Another goal of this grant application is to also assess initial changes, and particularly for changes to the fishing community that'll be virtually impossible to do with just 1 year difference between baseline and the second year of monitoring. So as you guys are considering a start date for MPAs, the later it gets into this year and even into 2012, you may have to consider, or I hope you'd also consider talking to OPC. If you can't start it sooner rather than later, that you'd consider talking to the Ocean Protection Council about changing the end date for the monitoring program. Thank you.
Thank you for your remarks, Leah.
I actually had one more separate comment.
Indulge her. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is kind of on a related topic and something that came up earlier. A year ago, actually, the commission was discussing guidelines for issuing scientific collection permits, and so I was just wondering, we haven't heard anything, and I was hoping that it would be before you guys soon.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Bayless, do you have any comment? No, thank you very much. You were preaching to the choir with respect to your frustration. One thing I might point out to you, and of course you do know this, the regulations are actually in the books with respect to the meets and bounds and what can go on in various site-specific areas. That outreach is a complicated outreach, but it you definitely can be doing that now. The start date remains an elusive target to us simply because of the niceties of the regulation process, and as we explained yesterday, we can cut no corners on that. It has to be done precisely. So we share your frustration, but we urge you to do your outreach, because the specificity of what you're telling them not the start date, but what you're telling them is there. It's in the books. Thank you. John?
Yes. Continuing on this item, commissioners, in terms of, we talked about the time that it takes the Office of Administrative Law to review a regulatory package, and that's kind of set. Now, in terms of an effective date of the regulations, there is some latitude to specify that date. And what I mean by that is we can't, for example, it would be very unrealistic for us to try to say that the regulations are going to become effective July 1st because of just the whole review process that's going on there. But there is a possibility of picking a date of, say, October 1st or November 1st or December 1st or January 1st and having a very strong ability to see that the review process would occur and be completed by that time. That would give a date that everybody could be aware of in terms
John,
of
John, I think that is something that we do need to do, and I think I'm going to trump Commissioner Sutton by suggesting that which I think is what he's going to say, that suggesting that at our next meeting we be prepared, Sankey and our staff, be prepared to do that. We're hearing a lot of frustration. We heard it yesterday, and we're going to continue to hear it. From people such as Leah Protopapadakis. Did I get that right? Yeah, I did. And rightly so. So the extent to which we can at least, and I think we should be conservative with respect to that so that we're comfortable that we can get it done by then, because she rightfully points out the difficulty and expense of having to put out start dates more than once. So, Commissioner Sutton, do you have a further comment?
I was just going to say July 1st works for me.
Well, June 1st works for me.
We call an aspirational goal.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so I think that then at our next meeting, we would want to discuss that in some specificity and see if we can come up with a suggested time period that is comfortable for the regulatory process. Thank you.
Didn't we already give the staff direction to have these dates and ready for us next meeting yesterday?
Yes, we were going to bring a timeline based on when we received the package from the department. Now we're going to look at saying receiving that package is imminent. In fact, we anticipate receiving it before the June meeting.
Right.
So we'll have information at the June meeting on the status of this, and we'll be able to give out timelines, and we can write this up as an agenda item that, you know,
Good.
Gives you latitude
Perfect.
To specify an effective date if you wish.
Perfect.
I think that's well said, Commissioner Bayless. What I was emphasizing was I want a date, a real date. I want the date, and I'd like it at our next meeting.
Okay. Bert Carlton, Roger Williams. And I'm sorry, I can't read the writing here. I think it's Mark Maxis. Thank you. And Jennifer Erickson Rehaber. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Bort Carlton, and in the spirit of the young and the articulate, which I'm not, but I'd like to read a letter from my daughter, who wrote on December 1st, 2010, a letter to the then Governor Schwarzenegger as this concerns Wild Haven Ranch. I'm writing this letter with extreme concern regarding Wild Haven Ranch and the San Bernardino Mountains of Southern California. The Wildlife Rehabilitation Center has been one of the best experiences of my life. I worked there as a volunteer this past summer. It was a life-changing experience, and I would be completely heartbroken to see it go. Before I began my work there for my school community service hours, I took a long course on how to handle the variety of animals, their body structures, diets, schedules, etc. But the most valuable information I took from the course was pure generosity. The 24/7 time and care that is put into these animals by the loving staff members out of their free time without any pay is truly astonishing. The reward you receive from working with these spectacular creatures is not money, but the gift these animals give you in return for your work. Diane and Roger, parentheses, the creators and owners of Wild Haven Ranch, have dedicated their entire lives to help animals in dire need of our love. to have all of that taken away because of unjust accusations of the DFG is unbelievable. It can't happen. To relocate these animals out of their hands is absurd. No one knows or can care for these animals like Diane, Roger, and their staff. Wild Haven Ranch is home to these precious animals and staff. We cannot remove them from their home and big, loving Wild Haven Ranch family. The concern of too much human contact is easily disputable. Diane and Roger were very specific about which animals I could or could not attend to and which animals could only be attended to by much more experienced volunteers, as I was new. As far as human contact goes, we were informed and knew exactly which animals to avoid. Certain animals suffer injuries that unfortunately prevent them from being released back into the wild due to disabilities that prevent them from successfully surviving. Other rescue animals were capable of being released, were avoided as much as possible. They were later released and could defend and provide for themselves in the wild. Wild Haven has been a success for years. It has benefited the community and the animals. I see no point in putting an end to such a harmless organization. One that has touched so many and helped tremendously, it means, well, absolutely no harm. To nitpick and find little ways to eliminate such a wonderful nonprofit organization is pointless. It had only positive effects on this world and should continue to save our animals and environment to better educate the public and continue to complete the lives of Diane and Roger and staff and I. Sincerely, Ariel Rose Carlton, sophomore, Campbell High School, North Hollywood, California.
Thank you, Mr. Carlton. Thank you for your commentary. I think it should be noted for the record that this commission and the Department of Fish and Game very much supports the efforts of the fine work of rescue organizations throughout the state. I'm sure you understand that we must respond to accusations and investigate them thoroughly because it may or may not be the case that Wild Haven is doing something wrong, but in the if it were, and if it weren't Wild Haven, some other organization, you would want us to be very careful about making certain that whatever accusations were taken all the way to ground truthing, and that's what we're doing.
I understand that, and thank you. And my daughter would have much rather read this herself, but she has a history exam this morning, which she preferred to be here, by the way.
Well, oftentimes these meetings are a rolling history exam, I'm afraid. Thank you very much, Mr. Crowell.
Thank you.
Roger Williams, followed by Mark Maxex, followed by Jennifer Erickson Rehaber, and then Paul Weakland. Go ahead, sir.
Gentlemen, I'd like to read a letter from Tim Donnelly, Assemblyman 59th District. That is the district that within which Wild Haven Ranch is located. May 1st, 2011, Dear California Fish and Game Commission, I'm writing this letter to lend my support to Wild Haven Ranch and their efforts to renew their wildlife rehabilitation permit. I would like to ask for consideration to allow the staff of Wild Haven Ranch to prove to the Department of Fish and Game that they are capable of handling the responsibility of caring for and releasing of wild animals in their care. In my short time in office, I have witnessed a disconnect between those whose job it is to enforce regulations and those who must comply with a myriad of different agencies and confusing laws that often require a law degree to decipher. The greater good in this case would be serving by partnering with Wild Haven instead of punishing them so that our community is served by having a place where our wild animals can be rehabilitated. Please give all consideration to strengthening this important public-private partnership rather than ending it over minor infractions of obscure code. Thank you for a thoughtful consideration in this matter. Godspeed. Signed, Assemblyman Tom Donnelly, 59th District.
Which assemblyman was that?
Tom Donnelly.
Tom Donnelly, thank you.
Tom Donnelly, 59th District, and I'll give Carol a copy of the letter.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Mark, followed by Jennifer Erickson Rehaber, followed by Paul Weakland. Again, ladies and gentlemen, when we call your name, please come on up so that you're ready to speak. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Mark Maxey. I'm a licensed falconer. I've worked with Wild Haven for about a year. I just want to let you know that I felt their cages and where they kept their eagles that I've helped with. They're in great condition. Their birds are healthy. I've helped them capture them, and cope the beaks and cope their talons. I've looked at their other birds of prey and helped talk to them about falconry a little bit. I just wanted you to know that up there in San Bernardino Mountains, they are great to have up there. They rehab a lot of birds of prey. And I can't think of any place to bring the hawks to that we find injured on the roads. The ranch is beautiful, and that's what I have to say about that. That what is going on just doesn't seem to be right, what is happening with Wild Haven Ranch. Their birds of prey, they seem to be in good condition when I've helped them with the birds.
Thank you, Mr. Maxey.
Jennifer Erickson, rehabber, Paul Weakland, and that will do the public forum part for this.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Erickson. Thank you for your time. I'm here today to speak on behalf of Wild Haven. I volunteered for Wild Haven off and on for the last 5 years, and I've worked for Second Chance Critters for the last 2 years. My main responsibilities at Wild Haven were caring, feeding, cleaning, first aid on incoming in-need animals, and training incoming volunteers. I was also lead person for the raccoons and the coyotes during that time. Once I had proven my abilities and I had enough time in, I became a satellite for Wild Haven, taking care of raccoons, opossums, and skunks. Mostly my experience is with raccoons and coyotes. These two animals could not be more different when it comes to imprinting, which is the main problem that Fish and Game has cited Wild Haven with. Coyotes will imprint, and that's a dangerous thing, because if they do imprint, they're still wild animals, and they're still going to react like wild animals. You might be able to bring it forward to play with or whatever, its trainer, but once it gets out in the wild, then you're in for trouble because Joe Public doesn't know how to deal with it. Whereas raccoons, they're a whole different ball game. Okay, I've had raccoons where they are just all about me, and they cry for me, and they want me because I'm their mom. I'm raising these raccoons from before they can see, when they're a couple of days old. And so, of course, they're going to imprint. And as much as they imprint on me, I'll give you a for instance. I did a release last year of 5 raccoons. 3 of these raccoons, their eyes were closed when I got them. They were a couple of days old. I raised them all the way through, and I interacted with them on a daily basis. I taught them to fish. I taught them to hunt. And then when I released them, I had a great release site, and I went back the next day to check to see, because you leave food when you release them. So I went to see if they still had food, because I like to keep up on that for a few days so they don't go hungry. And a couple of the raccoons were in a tree, and when I approached, now these were the raccoons that just 2 days ago like ran to the gate to see me, and these same raccoons just growled and left when they saw me. Did not make any difference that I made the sounds that always called them in for food or, you know, attention or whatever. Once they're out there within 24 hours, they're wild. I've had, you know, a really big problem with people taking in these babies and trying to raise them themselves. I just have one little point to make. You know, they're cute and they're easy when they're small, but we get the calls once they're, you know, 4 or 5 months old, and they're tearing up your house, or they're ripping apart your dog, you know, I mean, because they are wild. And imprinting raccoons is just not something, it really can't be done. Any raccoon just about that is healthy, that has been imprinted, even been with humans, I've seen it where they've been with humans for years. You take them out and you release them in a site away from humans, and within a day, they forget your name. They just don't respond to you the same way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Final speaker in public forum, Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, again, the frustration that is felt on the lack of being able to hit your deadlines on the abalone plan. No corners have been cut. Everything has been done, and we are still waiting. If you want to do this MPA process right, you will follow the abalone situation and miss every deadline consistently, break every promise. Now, a proposal for the abalone fishery, south of San Francisco, over 14 years ago, was a track record of proven management tools of a daily bag limit and seasons. We suggested the size limit be raised 7 3/4 inches for all abalone harvest everywhere in the state. This would leave a larger standing stock. We know that abalone start to reproduce at 2 inches. All right, what about this mission critical travel? Hey, does this mean that all the bells and whistles, frills, unneeded and unnecessary personnel and venues can be dispensed with? Just what has to be. No more fanfare. Only what is essential and cost effective? Well, goodness, that would be wonderful. When I first started doing these commission meetings, they were all held in Sacramento, located centrally in the state, so no one had to travel. I remember a lobster situation where you had the meeting in Alturas, yet very few lobster fishermen showed up. Yeah, and you said there was no opposition. Wrong again. Now, about this young man and his wanting to lower the bag limit for these fish. My God, he fishes in one of the most polluted areas of the state. Water quality is a big issue. The fish swim away from these polluted areas not to come back because the water quality is so poor. Let's talk about cleaning up the pollution. The big fish will come back. Let's talk about the failed federal policy, the overpopulation of seals, sea lions, and elephant seals. If you want lots of fish, we have to correct that failed policy. When I was a kid, you'd break your leg to run over to see a sea lion. They were rare, and we had lots of fish and big fish all the time. So, you know, it's not the fishermen. We know you need an easy target, someone that can't defend themselves well, so you pick on the fishermen. It's a real shame that the Fish and Game Commission was created in 1870 to preserve the fishing way of life here in California, but you have failed miserably. The mismanagement of the abalone resource in itself is something that we should be looking at. But oh no, that's a failure. It's an eyesore. So we purge it from the files. We eliminate it from the record. No failures are ever to be seen. We have been taught many lessons, but we're not allowed to learn because you won't allow it. No failures are supposed to be revealed. That's why the aquaculture industry keeps going.
Thank you, Paul. John?
That completes the public forum. Item 13 is announcement of results from executive session. We had an executive session yesterday afternoon, and this item is scheduled for our legal counsel to give the public a report on the results of the executive session, if any, and as appropriate. Rick?
Basically, the commission was advised with respect to a couple of items of litigation and agreed on a settlement offer to make in the Bunn case. Other than that, they took no formal action, although they did discuss at length the personnel situation regarding the open executive director's position. But again, no action taken on any matters. That's all.
Thank you, Rick. John?
We have no public speakers on this item.
14.
We're on to item 14, which is, if I can turn this page, update and possible commission action on the request of the cultured abalone in Santa Barbara County to lease kelp bed number 26. And commissioners, I'll give you just a brief background information. If you recall, you adopted regulations for the South Coast MPAs. Those regulations are going to go into effect, and one of the areas was designated as a reserve and would not allow kelp harvesting where the cultured abalone was operating, and I believe that was bed 27. And their desire was then to get into operating under in bed 26. We have, staff has submitted a ad, and It requested comments and competing bids to be submitted by May 2nd of 2011. There were no comments or competing bids submitted. There is one more minor detail which needs to be taken care of, and staff is recommending that we agendize this for a teleconference meeting in May. There's another agenda item that we'll get to a little bit later that we put it in conjunction with that for a teleconference meeting in May to approve this, and this will allow all the administrative matters to be taken care of with this.
Any questions or comments from the commissioners? Do we have any public
comment? We have one public speaker on this, and Paul Weakland is his name.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, this is not accurate, for I did make public comments at the last two meetings when this was brought up, and specifically that these kelp harvesting permits are a Gucci deal, aren't they? The people's harvest, the people's property, it's the people's resource, yet you allow them to harvest all they want for $100? What is the landing tax on kelp? Oh, it's so insignificant, it's not even worth talking about, is it? So the people are not getting their due and just rewards off of this resource. Shouldn't it be par with what you have to pay in the health food stores for the kelp? Make it amiable and fair for everyone. This kelp thing is just too much. Now, I know a little bit about abalone. I had a kelp harvesting contract with the Carlsbad Farms. But what we did is we harvested the lettuce kelp down under on the reefs. It's purple and green, and it does not grow very tall. And Paul Layton was the doctor that we were selling this to, and he said that feeding them this type of kelp made them grow so much faster and so much more resilient and more highly prized than feeding them this kelp that they have a lot of work to eat. It's not naturally their first choice of food to eat. The other thing about these farm-raised abalones, the feed that they're given, well, you know, all that's fine, and they try to imitate all that. But what is lacking is they are not under pressure of the ocean. What makes abalones what they are is because they survive at deep depths, you know? The pressure, the constant pressure of the ocean is what gives them their resilience, their health benefits. That's why they are highly prized, not because they grow them on a tank or right underneath the dock or right in these little pens. They don't have the pressure that they need to be a real abalone. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Weakland. So, John, do you have a suggested
recommendation to direct staff to put this on the teleconference agenda for a May meeting?
Do we have a suggested date for that?
We're going to get to a suggested date for that in a bit, and we're looking at sometime during the week of May 16th. So if you can check your schedules and see how that will work, we'd like to do that. Basically, excuse me, when we get to the ground fish regulatory item, my hope is that we can pick a teleconference date, do the ground fish regulatory item on that teleconference date, and add the kelp lease to that.
Okay. Just for your information, I will be out of the state Tuesday through Friday of that week, but I am in the state on Monday.
Okay.
The 16th.
The week of May 16th through the 20th, isn't it? 16, 17, 18,
yep.
19, 20.
That's correct.
The 16th is a Monday.
I am in the state of California, which we now know I have to be
right,
in order to vote on that, on the 16th.
Okay. Just background information, it would be to make a minor change to put the federal ground fish regulations in effect. It's a continuation notice. We're still waiting for something from the feds on this, but we anticipate getting that. So I've heard Commissioner Bayless say May 16th works for him. I've heard you, Vice President Rogers, say that it works for you.
Unfortunately, John, I'll be out of state on the 16th, but back on Tuesday evening, the 17th, and in state the rest of the week.
Okay.
Okay, so let's do this offline. It'll be a little complicated,
all right,
but we can figure it out offline then.
We'll figure it out, and we'll get that notice out. Thank you.
But I can't change my schedule for that week.
Okay. Understood. Agenda item 15, then. possible certification of environmental documents, adoption of findings, and proposed projects or alternatives for bear and or bighorn sheep. Today the commission is scheduled, and I'm going to refer to Sankey Mastrup here in just a minute. Today the commission is scheduled to complete a process that it started actually before the February meeting, and that was the 2011 and 12 mammal hunting regulations. The procedure is basically this, that you're going to be asked to certify a final environmental document, adopt proposed projects, and then adopt specific regulations in that order. So there'll be three basic motions for you. I have, at this point in time, no speaker cards on this, and I'm looking at our staff, and I don't see that we have any other speaker cards coming in yet. So we have no speaker cards on this right now, Commissioner Rogers.
Is anyone chat about this?
Sankey's prepared to talk about that, and we're going to refer to him right now.
Please go ahead.
Good morning, Vice President, Commissioner Sankey Mastrup, Fish and Game. I'll really quickly remind all, there's nine parts. The first part is a CEQA document, certification, so I'm assuming we're going to start with that. You have two CEQA documents that we're asking you to certify. One is the bighorn sheep, the other is the bear. We're asking you to certify the bighorn sheep. On the bear document, we're asking you not to. Based on some extensive comments, we're going to need to recirculate the bear document, so we're asking no action on the bear environmental document.
And why? What comments on the bear?
Well, we received quite a bit of comments from various folks about the content, and upon looking at it, there's some structural problems. For example, we reference some resources, and CEQA really likes, it's okay, but they really want a better summary in the document, so we need to correct those errors, and they are substantial. So under CEQA, the wisest thing, since we're likely to get litigated on this, we really need to get this right. So we're asking you to not adopt the bear document. And in the regulatory package, as a result, the substantive changes to the bear regulations, we're going to ask you to make no change. There are some administrative cleanups that we'll still ask you to make that don't have any environmental effect, so don't require a CEQA document per se to do. So I'll explain that. But at least for 15A, the environmental document, we're asking again, certify the sheep and take no action on the bear.
Commissioner Sutton, you have a question?
Not a question so much as just a comment. It also seems to me we're on somewhat dangerous political ground here, Sankey, especially with the quota increase, proposed quota increase. As the Los Angeles Times editorial board pointed out last week, we're proposing to do something that more than 99% of Californians disagree with or oppose. And that puts us on dangerous political ground, it seems to me, and something we ought to think about. It's not a scientific question, obviously, but it goes beyond the question of whether the bear population can sustain an increased quota to whether Californians really want that. So that's something we need to take into account.
Thank you, Commissioner Sutton. I was going to make a similar comment. One thing that I think that would be wise for the department to do, one of the comments that the editorial board of the LA Times raised, one of the questions that they raised, was the question of regional management. Some of the criticism with respect to raising the quota or even having a quota in the sense that the question was, I think, in essence, and Sankey, you can help me with this, do we really understand the dynamics of the bear population? Yes, we may have 40,000 bears, but are there regional differences, location-specific differences with respect to the viability of this population? We already manage sheep, with a regional view. And the question I think the editorial board was raising was, would it be wise? They were not suggesting don't have a bear harvest. I think their suggestion was, would it be wise for us to have a better understanding of the regional site-specific dynamics of the bear population? From my layperson's perspective, proto-layperson, in the sense that I don't hunt bear, or even study them other than here. That makes some sense to me. I realize that that's one more expense that the department is grappling with currently. What's your sense of that, Sankey? And if we were to come back with altering the BEAR rules in any way, would it be appropriate to integrate that sort of analysis into it?
Those are all excellent questions. And the story is a little complicated, so I'll try and be succinct. Certainly, you as a commission, we regulate all kinds of species through regional management. As you will laboriously have to be dragged through about deer, I got 47 deer zones. So there's certainly a precedent, and as you know, also in the marine environment, there's increasing pressure to go to regional management for things like abalone. So that's certainly a tool you have at your disposal. This issue came up last meeting, and we provided in your packet is the existing bear management plan, and it talks about the regional nature of bears and why we have currently a statewide approach to bear management. But if the commission wants to discuss what that might look like and the benefits and the costs of a more regional approach to bear management, that's certainly something we would enjoy having a conversation and discussion. The venue would be something you'd want to contemplate. But I think that's a legitimate thing to bring to talk about. But to be clear, we are confident that the package we're giving you for bear harvest is sustainable and will not impact even local bear populations. But if you want added assurances and more control, regional management is a tool to do that.
Commissioner Sutton, if I may just continue on this line, then I'll get to you in just a moment. I personally have no, as you know, I'm not ideologically driven. I am biologically driven. In this case, I am satisfied that the department is correct from a biological perspective. What's, I think, at issue here, and I think it's Commissioner Sutton raised this graphically by saying 99%. What's at risk here is, I believe, the optics of this, which is the au courant way to say it doesn't look good. And my sense of this is that what's at risk here is legislative action or initiative action to end the bear hunt, period. Much the same way that we had actions like that who stepped into our mountain lion, our ability to manage the mountain lion populations. I think we are one election cycle away from something like that if the department and the commission do not handle this in a very open manner. We always do, but I mean responding to people's genuine concerns. I'm not just talking about HSUS, but a whole bunch of other people in speaking in the terms of the LA Times editorial board. This is not something that I think, if we're not careful, this is one entire area that may be taken from the department and the commission simply because we didn't respond to the optics. And I really don't want that to happen. Because if it's biologically sustainable, it would be a real tragedy for us to sustain what I call, and many others call, the tyranny of the majority. Commissioner Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I generally agree with your comments. And I think, as Sankey knows, there's a trend toward more finer scale management of wildlife resources right across the board. So that would speak to the wisdom of regional management for bears and everything else. And it sort of harks back to our conversations last year about the department's short-lived proposal to expand the footprint of bear hunting in California that was ultimately withdrawn, partly because of local opposition in places like San Luis Obispo County. But it does suggest that, you know, we need to move. We're probably going to have to move from a statewide management regime to a more localized management in each area over time. Not all at once, perhaps, but it is something I think we should consider. So I'd support the president's request to look at that in the future.
Now, we are, Sankey, exquisitely sensitive and understand the implied or denoted increase in cost in doing that. I mean, we really do understand that. But much the same way as yesterday we were talking about public-private partnerships in geographic-specific marine management being very spatially oriented and what a significant difference that can mean. We know this is the way we have to go because biologically this is the correct thing to do. We also know that given this current budget environment, this is going to be extraordinarily difficult to do. So there's sort of a, how do you get over the, you know, the chasm here? How do we bridge ourselves across and construct the department and the commission's thinking so that we are preparing ourselves for doing that kind of management, both in the marine world and terrestrially as well?
Yeah, and we as wildlife managers, we have many tools in our toolbox and many ways to approach managing natural resources. So, you know, we have a current management structure for bears. You know, the department just presents you with the options based on that current management structure of the commission. The commission's the entity that has to blend biological options with a socio-political realities and circumstances. So we look to you on what options you want to entertain, and our job is to give you what those cost benefits are, and you make that ultimate decision. Currently, again, we do a statewide. If the commission doesn't want to proceed along that way and expand that quota, then of course I'd expect the commission to deny that change and then direct us to go, you know, basically you would be saying, we want to see a little more assurances or control at the local level, come back to us with a more regional model for doing this, and that's what we would do then. But that's kind of the direction we'd be looking to you from.
I think that's well said, Sankey. Commissioner Sutton?
I agree with that. I think, to be blunt, I think politically the danger here for the hunting lobby and those and the department to some extent is that they'll win the battle and lose the war by provoking the 99% of Californians that don't want this to happen. So sometimes in these situations, it's better to leave well enough alone.
You know, I strongly agree with this. In fact, I was having a conversation with someone who's in this audience today, the other evening, and he reminded me that 3.5 years ago, I said this, that if the optics aren't played correctly, there is going to be an initiative and or legislative action that will remove this entire activity from sportsmen. And to me, if it's biologically sustainable, that is a tragedy. That is a mismanagement by supposed stewards of the environment and then, of course, the regulatory agencies in the commission. That is simply just not positioning it correctly and not realizing that this is not simply the camel's nose under the tent. We must fight it at every point. This is whether or not we're going to have a tent. And that can be taken from the sportsmen of California in a heartbeat by the initiative of the legislative process. We need to have an administrative fix to this that puts everyone at rest, and we need to do that shortly.
Well, given what I'm hearing, the words I'm hearing from the commissioners, what I would suggest then, I'd hate to see staff spend a lot of time recirculating an environmental document that may not be the proposed project of interest. So what I propose would be then the commission agendize a discussion at the June meeting on revisiting what this proposed project would be, because I'm hearing something a little different than what we have structured right now. And
Sankey, I think I'm getting general agreement from my fellow commissioners and from my commission staff. We think that's a good idea.
All right. So we will look forward to June to having a broader, more detailed discussion about what a change to our bear management strategy and whether or not we recirculate what we have
okay.
on the table.
Thank you, Sunky. Now, holding bear out then from this discussion, John, would you proceed with the
yes.
with the motions and the things that we need to do since we're through with public comment?
Again, commissioners, three motions on this. The first motion will be to certify the environmental document, and the staff motion that we have prepared is that it's moved and seconded that the commission certifies that the final environmental document for bighorn sheep has been completed in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, that it was presented to the commission and the commission has reviewed and considered the information in the document prior to approving the project. The certified ED provides that there are no significant adverse environmental impacts resulting from the proposed project, and the commission finds on the basis of facts in the records and the document that the proposed project and alternatives will have no significant impact.
Do I hear that motion?
For sheep.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Bayless.
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton.
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers.
Aye.
Pass 3-0, two commissioners absent.
John, go ahead.
Yes, I'm trying to keep up
here.
Making
notes.
Yes. All right. The B part of this, and again, we're going to look to Sankey for help out on, for helping us out on this. It's going to involve adoption of the proposed project or alternatives, and we're going to need to clarify some of the alternatives involving bear, because it's my understanding that there is one clarification that the department still wants to make, and that is that harvest of a single bear per year is what we want to have. And then there's some other clarifications regarding the other species, deer, pronghorn, elk, and
correct.
So on. Sankey, go
yes,
ahead.
Thank you, Executive Director. The package that you're now contemplating moving, there's nine parts to it, and I want to cover them very quickly with some adjustments. You have, of course, 360, 361, which are deer, and what you've received in your packet are traditional. This time of year, we bring you the final quota recommendations, for, changing them from a range from the previous version. For deer, it's mostly minor changes. There is one change that for some will be significant. It's within the range you contemplated. Under 360, we are reducing the or recommending reduction in the B-zone quota from 55,000 to 35,000 tags in response to a decline in hunter success and requests from a lot of the folks up there that they want to see fewer hunters in the field. And then the rest, 360B, the X zones, and 360C, the additional hunts, those are minor ups and downs, but really no significant changes, including the 361 archery. Bighorn sheep, of course, we're adding two new zones and some new hunts, and we're changing the overall number of tags from 22 to 27. That's good news. Sheep are doing well. Pronghorn antelope. No significant changes, but there is a typo in the tag quota table, not in the verbatim. There's an archery doe quota for zone 3, the likely tables for archery hunt, that should read 0, not 9. 9 is next to 0, and somebody apparently didn't reach far enough. But it's correct in the verbatim. Elk, there's no significant changes in the quotas. But there is a change in a proposal to separate the Tinnamaha and the Tinnamaha West. Based on some data from last year, we're recommending not splitting those out. And that's in your packet. And then we come to Bear 365, which is the general seasons and rules, and 366, the archery. We are asking in 365, there's two options in front of you. A1 is increasing the harvest quota from 1,700 to 2,000. That obviously we're asking no change. Item A2 specifies only one bear may be taken per year. There's a language that's not clear. It's one, and this is just a technical change to make sure it's only you're only allowed one bear per year for the tag. So we're asking you to adopt that. It's an administrative cleanup. In 366, the archery bear, there's three options in there. The first option, one, is to change to align the bear archery seasons with deer seasons. We're asking, because of the environmental document, a no change on that. However, the two other items specifying one deer per year per tag, again, administrative cleanup, we're asking you to adopt. And then also item three eliminates a subsection 366F that refers to a section 367, which was deleted in 2002. It's also an administrative cleanup, and we're asking you to adopt that one. And that summarizes the changes, and I also just wanted for clarity point out that there are several other items in this package that deal with amending regulations for implementing ALDS, some adjustments for eligibility requirements for disabled hunting permits, procedures for replacing lost tags, and then adjustment of some fees pursuant to Fish and Game Code 702. So that's the package.
Thank you, Sonke.
With the changes I am requesting.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from my fellow commissioners? John, you have a motion.
Yes, and it's going to take me a minute, and my tongue is obviously going to get tangled. So we've done both already. Moved and seconded that the Commission, pursuant to the Public Resources Code, adopts the proposed projects or for the proposed regulatory actions relating to Section 360 and 361 for deer and archery deer hunting, 362 for bighorn sheep, 363 for pronghorn, with the noted clarification that Sonke provided on the typo, Section 364 dealing with elk, no change for Section 365, 366 on bear, except for two items, cleanup of language to clarify that it's one bear per year, and a minor clarification in the text for 366F.
One correction. I believe I may have misspoke on the Tinnamaha. We're asking on the Tinnamaha a no change. Just to be clear.
You did not misspeak.
Well, I described it incorrectly, I think, although my brain is trying to rewind.
Okay.
The original proposal was to make the two hunts tags used in both zones, and we're asking not to combine that. I may have reversed it, but the bottom line is for 364 is a no change to the proposed a request for the Tinnamaha
right.
And West Tinnamaha.
Go ahead, John.
All other changes for elk are
correct.
Proposed.
Yes.
No change regarding the split on West Tinnamaha.
Correct.
Go ahead, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then there's also numerous sections involving the hunting application, tags, seals, permits, and fees in Section 702 and 711, methods authorized for taking involving archery equipment and crossbow regulations. Basically, these will be specified in the official motion, which will be submitted to the Office of Administrative Law with the regulatory action. And that's the motion to approve the proposed projects or alternatives as specified. Yeah.
John, I think you also meant to say that 366 had a couple of alterations as well.
Yes. Both 365 and 366 involving bear
right.
have a couple of alterations, and they involve clarifying that it is one bear per year.
Fundamentally, it's administrative.
Yes.
Okay, do I hear that motion?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
John?
Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
3-0, Commissioner Kellogg and Richards absent. The third part is finally to adopt tag quota changes, clarifications, and urgency changes for the 2011 and 12 mammal hunting regulations. Sonke, do you want to have anything to add on this? This is making commissioners basically the specific tag quota changes that the department's recommended.
No, we're recommending other than the typo to the archery, we stand by the tables that describe all the quota final quota recommendations.
Okay. Do I have any questions from fellow commissioners? No.
Okay.
John.
Moved and seconded that the Commission, pursuant to specific sections of the Fish and Game Code, which will be all specified in the official motion given to the Office of Administrative Law, will add and amend or repeal regulations of Title 14 involving specific sections of the Fish and Game Code, which will all be itemized in the motion. Specifically, I want to clarify that there will be no change for bear. Either archery bear or regular bear, other than the clarifications that we talked about of one bear per season, and that it adds or amends or appeals these regulations involving tag quota changes.
Do I hear that motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
John?
Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Pass 3-0.
Move on to 16.
16 is receipt of public recommendations and requests for authorization to publish notice of commission intent to amend sections 300, 311, and 472 of Title 14 regarding resident and migratory upland game hunting. Members of the public, the discussion hearing is scheduled for June 30th of 2011. An additional discussion and possible adoption of these regulations are scheduled for August 4th of 2011. This is scheduled, commissioners, for you to receive public recommendations and to authorize staff to publish notice of intent to consider amendments to Section 300, 311, and 472 of Title 14 regarding resident migratory upland game hunting and the take of domestic pigeons. Deputy Director Sankey Mastrup is here to give an overview of this. At this point in time, I have no public comments on this.
Good morning, commissioners. Yes, this package, this is our upland game hunting cycle, if you will. We have five specific proposals for your consideration. One is to establish a quota range for sage grouse, and that range is in the packet. The second one is to adjust the falconry bag limits from one bird per day to one per day and one per season. We changed an area in North and South Mona to one, and falconry regs were never adjusted, so this is a kind of a cleanup. The third is the federal government is considering expanding white-wing dove harvest legal statewide, so we have a conforming thing that would conform to that broader opportunity for white-wing doves. The fourth item is a proposal to allow 177 caliber air rifles for taking of turkeys. That's picking up a public recommendation. And the fifth one is to make Title 14 consistent with Fish and Game Code regarding the take of domestic pigeons.
Thank you, Sankey. We don't have any public commentary. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Nope. John, go ahead.
Suggested motion, moved and seconded, that the commission hereby authorizes staff to publish notice of intent to amend sections 300, 311, and 472 of Title 14 regarding resident migratory upland game hunting and take of domestic pigeons.
Do I hear that motion?
Motion.
So moved. Second.
John?
Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
I'm sorry. Commissioner Sutton?
I just had a question about this, when it's appropriate. Sankey, I understand where we've done this annual change to the upland bird regulations. There are two issues, though, that I think we should bear in mind for the future. One, I'm mindful of the Audubon Society's previous testimony about the concern over sage grouse. Status of sage grouse, whether or not we should permit hunting in a condition where the population is declining in many areas, and there's a lot of concern over the future of sage grouse. I think this is fine because the department made the case quite effectively that these management changes are warranted, but it is something we want to keep an eye on in terms of the status of sage grouse. The other thing, of course, is the general move toward the use of non-toxic ammunition for hunting like this. If it makes sense to hunt waterfowl for 20 years using non-toxic ammunition, surely it makes sense to hunt other things using non-toxic ammunition. So we should consider that in terms of future rulemaking packages.
So you're not suggesting that now. You're suggesting
not
that
now,
for the future.
But it is something to keep in mind for the future, since that seems to be a trend. Interestingly enough, Mr. President, if you'll permit me a local analogy, yesterday a number of us visited the enormous sporting goods shop, Bass Pro Shops, here in Rancho Cucamonga. We were interested to discover that on sale there were non-toxic pellets for use in pellet guns. So the ammunition manufacturers seem to be ahead of us here. They're already adopting non-toxic shot in anticipation of future regulations, which I think is really smart on the part of the industry.
Yes. Thank you. So, can you comment here?
Not on the lead specifically, but certainly there will be opportunity to make recommendations to the rulemaking at the June and later meetings. There is one thing I'd like to point out. I recall the gentleman yesterday, I think it was from the National, the East Mojave. I forgot to mention, in the rulemaking package is an option to establish a youth-only quail and chukar hunt in the Mojave National Park. We have some concerns with it, and we look forward to kind of having discussion. And some of you have heard, while this youth thing is certainly a wonderful thing, there are some costs and downsides. And so we have it as part of the package as an alternative, but we have some concerns. And at the June meeting,
we
hope to get
that.
A chance to
yes.
talk about
Thank
it.
Thank you, Sonk. Any further questions or comments from the commission? John?
And I want to back up just a little bit.
We had three votes on that, three ayes.
Yes, I was going to clarify that information, that the motion was made by Commissioner Bayless and seconded by Commissioner Sutton, passed unanimously 3-0.
It did.
Thank you.
17.
Number 17 is receipt of public recommendations and request for authorization to publish notice of commission intent to consider amendments to the waterfowl migratory game bird regulations for 2011 and 12. That's section 502 of Title 14. Members of the public discussion hearing will tentatively be scheduled for June 30th. An additional discussion and possible adoption of the regulations are scheduled for August 4th. As you know, commissioners, this is an annual process. We can receive public recommendations at this meeting, and you can authorize staff to publish notice of intent to consider amendments to the waterfowl hunting regulations for 2011 and 12. Deputy Director Mastrop is here to handle this.
And do we have public speakers?
I believe not.
All right.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sonke Master of Fish and Game. I'd first like to apologize that Dan Perigary's not here to do this. We always enjoy his presentations on this subject. He's way better informed than I am. But I will try and do my best Perry-esque-like effort.
You'll never get to his level of performance, Sonke.
No, I'm not even going to try.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
Oh, is he really?
And didn't you do your master's on some kind of fowl? Is that right?
Quail. Isn't
quail.
Yes. The most excellent game bird in the world, by the way. But there are five basic proposals in this package. Of course, they're all contingent upon going through the Pacific Flyway Council process. The first one is to remove restrictions on small Canada geese daily bag limit in the northeastern zone. The second is to increase white-fronted and white goose season length to 105 days in the balance of the state zones and split a season in two segments. The third is increase the white front daily bag limit to 6 geese in the northeastern, southern San Joaquin Valley and balance of the state zones. The fourth is to extend the white front goose season length in Sacramento Valley Special Management Area by 7 days. And the fifth one, of course, is the standard waterfowl hunting lengths between 38 and 107 days, including 2 youth waterfowl hunt days for all hunting methods and a range of bag seasons that you'll be hearing about later. And that's basically a quick summary of the package. I stopped talking, yes.
Yes, Sonke, thank you very much. I'm sorry, we were... what was your name again? I'm sorry. Who were you? Go ahead.
Stop because you're finished, or did you just decide to...
Correct. I very beautifully and succinctly summarized the package.
Never.
No, it was a foul presentation.
We don't stoop to that. We don't stoop to that level of talking to Davis, folks.
Gentlemen, let's move along here.
We're ready to... There are no public speakers on this. Commissioner Rogers.
Any further commentary or questions from the commission? John, you have a motion.
We have a motion, and the motion is that the commission authorize staff to publish notice of intent to amend the migratory game bird waterfowl regulations for 2011 and 12. Need a motion?
Do I have that motion?
So moved.
Second.
John?
Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Moved by Commissioner Sutton, seconded by Commissioner Bayless, passed unanimously 3-0, that authorization to go to notice. Did you want to take a short break?
Well, I'm Commissioner Sutton is going to have to be called out of the room for a moment. Is this a time to take maybe a 15-minute and see if we can do that? Okay. We will stand in recess for 15. There is a... given only three of us, we can't have one of us missing. So we're gonna call a recess for 15 minutes.
Okay. So we are on federal ground fish, aren't we?
Yes.
Do you want to take this guy on wild game first?
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll start the commission meeting here in another 30 seconds. 29. 28. Thank you, everyone. The Fish and Game Commission is back in session. Unfortunately, the reason we broke didn't happen, so we're back in session. John? We're going to step slightly out of sequence here to accommodate the speaker.
We had an individual that came in after the public forum portion was finished, and we'll make some efforts to accommodate him. His name is Dr. Paul Bacamini, I'm sorry if I've slaughtered your name, but please come forward.
Dr. Bacamini, would you raise the microphone? Is it on, by the way?
No.
It doesn't look like
it's
on.
There's a red light that should be on.
No, don't push there. We'll fix it for you. Okay, just make sure that you can hear yourself in the speakers, and then you'll be out on the Internet.
Very good. My name is Dr. Paul Bacamini. I am a resident of Lake Arrowhead and executive board member of Wild Haven. I appreciate you accommodating me. My teaching schedule is kind of tight, so I'm in between. I just wanted to come to the commission and represent that Mr. and Mrs. Williams, as well as the staff, as well as us on the executive board, are really concerned about our hearing and the fact that we want the opportunity to meet all the standards, in fact, be above the standards, and we're working toward that, and we look forward to the hearing. And I just wanted to come in, not only as a member of the board, but also as a resident of Lake Arrowhead, that our wildlife and our beautiful community is very important to us, and Wild Haven is very important to our community. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dr. Bacamini. Thank you for
so
taking
much.
Your time to come down here. And we, you are aware of the hearing date and
yes.
all, and it'd be very important.
We'll be there.
To hear
you
that.
Bet. I just wanted to present that to the commission.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for coming.
Okay, so we're on to agenda item 18. We have one public speaker on this item. I'll read through a brief introduction and turn it over to Sankey Mastrup, and we have a staff kind of a recommendation on this for you too. 18 is the update on the status of federal ground fishing regulations. That's 18A. We'll get that update from the department. 18B involves reconsideration of Commission's October 21st action, and we'll talk about that after we get the update from Sankey. But basically, Commissioners, NMFS, the National Marine Fisheries Service, made its final decision on the 2011 and 12 ground fish regulations. Those rules have been submitted to the Office of Federal Register. They were submitted on April 28th, but I don't believe they've been printed yet. Sankey is here to talk a little bit about the specifics of what NMFS has done, and we've got one speaker card on this, and we'll have a staff recommendation.
Sankey, go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioners. Sankey Mastrup, Fish and Game. Real quickly, as you will recall, on October 21st, 2010, the Commission approved several changes to ground fish regulations recommended by the department. These were based to make them consistent with the Pacific Fishery Management Council action in June 2010. In early November, we were notified that they would be unable to implement it by January. Due to the delay, your staff withdrew the rulemaking from OAL. Then on April 29th, 2011, NOAA Fisheries issued a written statement indicating approval but all but two of the proposed changes to the federal recreational fishing regulations that apply to waters off California. Although the two proposed measures were considered separately, both were specific to waters of the Cod Conservation Area. The first proposal would have allowed shelf rockfish, things like reds, staries, taken in waters open to groundfish fishing to be retained. Presently, only nearshore rockfish may be retained in the Cod Conservation Area. And the second proposal would have extended the allowable groundfish fishing depths in the California Cod Conservation Area out to 30 fathoms. Presently, it's 20. And so, due to those disapprovals, the commission now is in a position of having to modify their action they took back in October. I do want to point out that of the two options, the retention of shelf rockfish in 20 fathoms is purely a state jurisdictional issue. So you have choices there, but so you'll need to decide whether you want to conform fully to the changes or you want to make a modification in the 20 fathoms just for full you have that authority under your regulations. So if there's any questions, we recommend that you schedule this for adoption. The other point of clarification is your regulations may not go into effect exactly the same time the federal regulations, so we're going to have to be working with our law enforcement to make that a smooth transition.
We do have a public speaker. Any questions in the interim for Sankey? John?
Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland, you're increasing the take. Does this mean that the previous surveys were in error? It seems that your surveys these days never contain the percentage of error, the chances for mistakes. Obviously, mistakes were made. Seems the ocean is healing. That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Weakland. John?
Staff would recommend that the commission do a couple of things. Authorize us to publish a continuation notice regarding the modification of the groundfish regulations. Schedule a teleconference meeting during the week of May 16th to possibly adopt changes. And as Sankey discussed here, our desire is to do two things. One, as much as possible to have consistent dates with the federal regulations so that they go into effect at the same time and don't pose an enforcement problem. And then second, to have those regulations be consistent in terms of their specific details regarding retention and things like that as possible. We're asking for direction to authorize us to publish a continuation notice and then to try to schedule a teleconference during the week of May 16th. And
okay.
At that time, we also include the Kelp lease item, obviously.
Commissioners, are there any comments or questions? Nope. John?
We're taking that as your direction, and that's what we're going to do.
And there is a suggested motion, I understand.
Let me look at that.
Yeah, there's one.
Moved and seconded that the commission, thank you for bringing that to my attention, that the commission authorize staff to publish notice of commission intent to amend groundfish regulations.
So moved.
Second.
John?
Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Passed 3-0. Moved by Commissioner Bayless, seconded by Commissioner Sutton.
Number 19.
Number 19 is review and discussion of state water bottom lease template for aquaculture, including rental rate and term conditions. AGP, I think you're trying to Skype in with Eureka on that. Am I correct? You can just kind of nod your head or wave at me or something if that's the case. So you're trying to Skype in with Eureka on that. Commissioners, we have a number of speaker cards on this. I want to, just for not being able to count, let's say five or six speaker cards on this.
That's fine, but before we do that, AGP, do you know if you've been successful connecting with them?
The problem is your screen is down here.
Your screen is down here, so we're not seeing anything.
Yeah, because I saw her behind you, but you can't see her. Oh, there she is.
Ah.
All right. Maybe a light bulb burned out. Maybe it's that simple.
I just noticed it down.
Just this man.
Kick the cord.
The extension cord's actually lit.
It's coming up now. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love those technical fixes. You know, plugging it in is one of those great technical fixes.
Reverb, too.
Okay, good. We have a visual. Thank you. What is the blip, blip, blip noise? Is that just me going blip, blip, blip?
Good. All right. Okay.
Word.
By way of background, commissioners, staff and the department have been working on the state water bottom lease template for quite some time now. A draft template has been put out, and as everybody's noticing here, we have the Department of Fish and Game folks here by Skype ready to comment on this. We also have Sonke Mastrup ready to kind of introduce them and cue it all up, and then we'll take public speakers on this. This is scheduled for us to get some general direction. It's not necessarily a formal vote on this, but we'll anticipate getting some general direction from you, Commission, at the end of this.
Commissioner Bayless, would you turn on your microphone? Thank you.
Chair, thank you. And can I speak?
Please.
Mostly on department recommendations, we get pretty distinctive recommendations. In this case, you're just in the recommendation section, the department is just quoting a bunch of more information.
Well, maybe it didn't come across. In your packet is a proposal with very specific recommendations, so maybe it didn't come across.
If you look back in section 19, Commissioner Bailey.
Oh, okay. Well,
again, Commissioner Bailey, I'm sorry. Your microphone.
Vagueness lends to error, so I'm just adding for more specific recommendations.
Correct, and I appreciate you pointing that out. Normally, we're very specific. But this one has some interesting history, so there's a little reason for it. As you know, Devin Bartley, the former aquaculture coordinator, back in 2009, started this conversation, and we've been working on it for quite a while. And it's just to kind of tee up the presentation and further discussion, there's two parts to this, and it's caused some confusion, so I want to clarify. There's the lease template, which is actually the boilerplate, the fundamental terms of the lease, like insurance and performance, et cetera, which a department lawyer, Joe Milton, and your counsel, Mr. Thalheimer, worked on together and drafted a version that has been posted on our website for a little while now. So that's the lease template. So any discussion or questions on the template, I would defer to Mr. Thalheimer. What you're going to hear from us, which is the memo dated April 19th and the presentation by Kristen, is our recommendations on rental rates and the length of the lease and provisions, which will get inserted into the template as a specific item. And so based on past direction from the commission, we're giving you kind of some feedback on what we would propose, but it's been very clear from previous discussion of the commission. The commission's been holding a very tight hold on what they want to do, and we haven't really gotten enough specific recommendations to know in order to provide the typically very succinct and direct recommendations you're used to.
No, this is actually the first time, in my opinion, that we have been in a position to provide that specific recommendation to you so you can come back to us. And thank you for having provided the material to us. Anyway, let's go forward.
Yes.
And, so, Kristen?
And with that, Kristen, who unfortunately was planning to be here and do this presentation live and was most disappointed, is relieved and will be doing this by Skype. Hi.
Well, she looks live to me.
Yes. So with that, Kristen?
Good morning, Vice President and Commissioners. My name is Kirsten Ramey. I am the Department's Marine Region Aquaculture Coordinator, and I have some information to provide to you today on the shellfish aquaculture program costs and to present the department's recommendations on lease rental rates and term for state water bottom leases for aquaculture. This is to assist the commission with any decisions that are going to be made on this subject. And all recommendations that are presented today are focused on decisions that are entirely within the commission's authority. So if we can get the presentation keyed up.
We have that now.
Okay. Yep, next slide. So to get started, the shellfish aquaculture program costs have been updated since the last evaluation in 2009. The updated cost for administering the program is approximately $175,000 annually. This updated estimate includes the cost of administering the entire shellfish aquaculture program. This is approximately 24 commercial shellfish businesses. Of those 24 businesses, only 9 businesses lease state water bottoms from the state. The remaining are land-based shellfish farms, primarily raising abalone, or businesses that operate on granted tide lands that the department does not manage, such as the leases up here in Humboldt Bay. A large portion of the program costs are incurred by the department's shellfish health laboratory, but it also includes the salary, benefits, and overhead for department staff that are involved in administering all aspects of the program. Next slide. Now I'm going to talk about the department's proposed lease rental rates for state water bottom leases and the methodology behind them. Based on comments from the commission, I looked into how to develop a production-based rental rate and researched how our neighboring Pacific Coast aquaculture areas charge rent for their state water bottoms. I found Washington to be a good model to base our rental rates on. Washington uses what they call a flat rate methodology that's based on potential production of the water bottoms, which could be applied to California with some modifications. Rather than potential production, actual production was used to calculate the 10-year average productivity per acre of California's existing leases, which there are 16. And these values were plotted on a graph. The values naturally fell into three groups that are labeled low, moderate, and high. Leases that produce greater than 100,000 oysters per acre per year are classified as high productivity leases, and they shall pay $150 per acre. Moderate productivity leases harvest between 20,000 and 99,999 oysters per acre per year and shall pay $100. And leases that produce between 2,000 and 19,999 are low productivity areas and shall pay $50 per acre. Title 14 specifies that for state aquaculture leases, the minimum production requirement is 2,000 oysters per acre per year, which is how the low productivity classification was defined. The other production values that you see are based on how the numbers fell in the graph. The dollar amounts were also modeled after Washington State, but they've been slightly lowered based on the fact that California does not have any natural recruitment of shellfish, which is an advantage to growers in Washington State because it creates a reduction in startup costs. And you have been provided with the actual rent for the 2010-2011 fiscal year for state water bottom leases in Washington in your binders. The productivity classifications that have been defined can be recalculated at specified intervals in order to adjust this flat rate of the leases. So if one lease falls within the low category today, but over time becomes more successful, we can recalculate it and adjust its the flat rate of that lease. In addition, the flat rate will be annually adjusted based on the implicit price deflator, which is the index used to determine the annual rate of decrease or increase in entitlements issued by the department. Next slide. In addition to the adjusted lease rental rates, the department is also recommending the implementation of three new fees for the program. One is a lease renewal fee of $200 per lease, a lease amendment fee of $300 per lease, and a yearly inspection fee of $2,000. The yearly inspection fee would be charged as a facility is inspected by department staff and would apply to all commercial shellfish businesses, including the abalone farms and the granted tideland leases. Next slide. The current program shortfall is estimated at approximately $124,000 based on this updated cost estimate I provided. I projected the revenue for the program through 2033 and determined by 2027, the annual shortfall will be recovered using the increased rental rates, the proposed fees, the estimated taxes that are generated for shellfish, the revenue from existing fees, and adjustments based on the implicit price deflator. I do want to point out that there's a 70% reduction in the shortfall for the program by next year if the new rates and fees are applied to the existing leases that are currently up for renewal. And as future leases are updated and are renewed, that shortfall will continue to be reduced. Despite the fact that it takes until 2027, we have to realize that all state-managed aquaculture leases will not reach their expiration dates and be updated with the proposed rental rates until 2033. Next slide. I'm going to switch gears now and provide the department's recommendations on lease length. The department recommends renewing leases for 15 years with an annual implicit price deflator adjustment on the rent, as well as a recalculation of the productivity classification. The rationale behind a 15-year lease is that a longer tenure reduces the department's and the commission staff's administrative workload and costs. It provides for stable revenue through shellfish privilege taxes, fees, and rent. It fulfills the state's mandate and support of environmentally sustainable aquaculture, while at the same time, a longer tenure allows for better business planning for the shellfish growers. Next slide. In summary, the department's goal is to develop a strategy to recover our program costs while allowing for the industry to be economically viable and environmentally sustainable. Thus, we are proposing an increase in the lease rental rates, as well as the addition of three new fees that would allow us to meet our program costs in 2027. And we are also recommending a lease renewal length of 15 years. Next slide. With that, I want to thank you for your time, and we'll take any questions.
Thank you, Kirsten. We do have public speakers. Are there any questions from the commission? No, public speakers.
So, Kirsten, we're going to take public speakers first, and then I suspect there'll be some questions coming to you or coming to somebody. I have a bunch of speakers here, and I'll try to get them all in the order that I was given them. Bernard Friedman, Martin Strain, Michael Toussaint, first three. Again, when we call your names, kind of get lined up and prepared to speak. If you have something to hand out, give them to our staff. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Bernard Friedman. I'm from Santa Barbara Mariculture Company. I had a different speech set up, but I guess there's a lot of issues in front of us. I'll just address a few of them. For personally, just go with the $50 an acre issue. and just say that, you know, since I have an open ocean, I'm in the ocean, it's basically an experimental lease. I grow mussels, and I'm establishing a new frontier for shellfish farming in the spirit of sustainable seafood. I kind of have to go against the grain of the sort of high intensive farming that you guys are proposing in the lease, because I have whales and other large marine life that pass through my lease, and so I have to space my lease apart, and so I'm more in the spirit of low intensive farming. And also I have this new issue of domoic acid, which has affected my lease, so I'm closed now for 3 months and counting. And so, you know, what do you do? How do I pay rent if I don't have an income coming? And so there needs to be some sort of allowance that, you know, some sort of a relief allowance that's built into the new lease that, you know, if I get hurt or something happens to the lease and it's no longer viable, you know, how do we negotiate that? Do we reduce the rent, or, you know, and, you know, because it's an open ocean lease, I'm not cultivating all my 70 acres. I'm only on a third of that because I don't have a, you know, I'm, this is very new. So why, you know, we're just establishing the rules, you know, how to farm and, you know, how do you farm in the ocean? How do you do it? So I'm establishing that. So I'm not using my 70 acres. So, you know, paying for that, those 70 acres that I'm not using, it doesn't quite make sense. What's the other thing? Yeah, it just sort of I guess I'd like to address the other part is this sort of cost recovery, is that we are 9 leaseholders and we're paying for the entire shellfish program. It doesn't quite jive because there's like the abalone farms, there's a lot of other shellfish growers or whatnot that don't operate on state lands. So there's a discrepancy that somehow, I guess, we're going to pay for their part of usage. I mean, I don't use the health lab at all. Those guys never come on my lease, or I don't have anything to do with the health lab. And so there's something not right there with this cost recovery, and we need to flesh that out. But I don't want to bog that down and with this lease template. I think we should get this lease template going. We just need to work on the fine details and hammer it out, and then try to deal with the cost recovery, because it doesn't quite mesh.
One question, Mr. Friedman. Any questions over there?
I do.
Please, Commissioner Bayless.
So I hear your case. Would you be more in favor of a price per unit or 100 units of what you harvest versus on an acreage?
For me, for farm, you know, because there's bad years, there's good years, so it would be better if it was tied to productivity.
That's what I'm asking.
Like a privilege tax. Because I grow mussels, the privilege tax is a lot higher, about 6 times higher the tax than it is on oysters. So you could increase the...
So you would support if we charged you per what you harvested?
That would be more favorable, because we're farmers. There's good years and there's bad years.
I understand.
I need to point out, the commission has no authority
to
adjust
the
privilege tax. That's a legislative authority.
I didn't move to it. I'm glad you pointed that out for me, Sonky, but I'm just asking what the he would prefer, and I presume we can pursue legislative options if we so choose.
Absolutely.
If in fact we wanted to call it privilege tax, but there are perhaps some other ways. But anyway.
And as a point of clarification, the rental rates you saw, that your packet you received in your binder is a lot more detailed, but that actually is based on production. So if he's operating in a low production area, he pays the low rental rate. So it's kind of based on...
Yeah, I qualified it, but I still think of it... Well, I'm just asking if he would like it by unit what he produced.
Yeah, my production, I'm actually going to give up the oysters just because it doesn't work with domoic acid. And so go more to mussels and just the intensity. You know, my production is basically, you know, like 3,000 oysters per acre. It's never going to get higher than that. And it just doesn't really mesh with what I'm doing. I'm not in the intertidal zone. It's just not. It's just apples and oranges. It's very different. And to have a high fixed cost, you know, that's the other important aspect. If I go out of business because of these high fixed costs, upfront costs, you know, I hold the permits, and the the state may not be able to lease that area again because of just, you know, it's been grandfathered in. You know, I take all the leases with me, and that may just go back.
Well, that all depends on how the lease template is written.
If you guys hold, but we
understand we're all in this business together.
That'd be great. Yeah,
I mean, if you're going to win, we're going to win. If you're not going to win, we shouldn't. So no, we understand that part,
okay.
And you are as you well understood, Stan, quite unique with respect to all of the other producers. So we do understand that.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Martin Strain, followed by Michael Toussaint, followed by John Finger.
Hello, Martin Strain, Point Reyes Oyster Company. Thanks for letting us talk about the aquaculture lease template. We're working on the lease template language, and we think that we're making some headway in that direction. And I think that the 15-year term that the department is putting forward is going to be adequate for most of the people in the industry, as long as we have the right to renew. But I think a lot of us are going to have problems with the cost structure. As Bernard is saying, farming's it's a up and down activity. You can have good years and you can have bad years. I think that there's quite a difference in the industry amongst the newer entrants versus the more established players, and a low rental rate is in the interest of the industry overall. It may not be in the interest of the department, but we in the industry would like to see the cost recovery to cover the department's costs come from a aquaculture registration fee that's on a tiered level or a percentage of the gross of the operation. What the situation is right now in California is there's the highest grossing firms are some that are not on state leases. They're on harbor district leases. At least one of the, it's perhaps the highest grossing firm in the state, doesn't grow shellfish out to term. They sell seed oysters. So they're not paying any landing tax. They're not paying any lease fees directly to the state, and yet they may be commanding some of the highest services of the state. And we're not allowing or we're not extracting taxes in relation to their use of services. If we adjust the aquaculture registration fee, we can capture an appropriate amount of money from each of the members of the industry and easily cover the budget of the state, and it'll be done in an equitable manner. It won't stymie production, and it will actually allow the industry to step forward and produce more. That's what we would like to see done. We're interested in pursuing this with our legislatures. We're talking to them about it, and we would like the cooperation of both the department and the commission to move in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strain. Very interesting commentary, by the way.
Michael Toussaint, John Finger, George Trevelyan. Go ahead, sir.
Commissioners, Mike Toussaint, Marin Oyster Company. I'd like to comment on a few things today. One is the issue of cost recovery. As Martin Strain just indicated, and Bernard Friedman to an extent, high fixed rents are less suitable for us as operators than paying taxes, the state getting revenue through either grosses, the number of oysters sold and our overall gross. So what I'm driving at is the aquaculture registration fee currently has two tiers, a lower tier for people who make who sell less than $25,000 a year gross, and then an additional tier above. But we're talking, there's several firms who don't lease state water bottoms, who in fact
their revenues are in the millions. Now, I don't want to be self-serving and pick on them, but in the on the topic of cost recovery, I think that would be a little more equitable. And if we can pursue that in addition to some of the other increased fees and inspection fees and so forth that the department recommends that we support, that might be beneficial. The other thing I noticed in looking through some of the documents that were given to me by Kirsten Ramey involving the state's costs in the budget, the lab costs go up from a 2009 laboratory, these are shellfish pathology reports, testing of shellfish. They go up from $18,500 to $70,000 for 2011. And there may be a reason for that. I'm not quibbling about that. But I'm thinking if an individual company is using state lab services, that's practically a subsidy. And, you know, for example, I would love to bring in shellfish from outside the tri-state area. They would need to be tested and approved by DFG, and that's quite an elaborate and expensive process, but why should I not be paying for that? And so if the DFG biologists could determine their cost for reviewing samples, so that's to say testing live shellfish samples for pathogens, disease, and whatnot, why should I not then have to why should I not pay that cost myself? Another thing is the department biologist possibly could recommend a private lab, an approved independent lab, and the individual grower could pay for these tests. So those are my comments about cost recovery, that to try to push some of the costs and the department's costs in the direction of the people who use the services most should be paying for them the most. And I'm happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Sun. Any questions? No. Thank you.
Commissioners, I did want to point out that you have a letter in your packet that has that includes some of these points, and I understand there may be some additional written material coming to you, but I did want to point that out before we get further into testimony.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
John Finger, George Trevelyan, Paul Weakland.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak again about this. I'm John Finger. I'm the president of the Haugan Oyster Company and also on the board of directors of the Pacific Coast Shellfish Growers Association. So as you've heard here, we have two related but separate issues. And I really want to thank Kirsten for her putting forward that to kind of clarify that a little bit. So we have this program cost that's a shellfish program cost that includes a lot of cost to non-state leaseholders. So I want to make sure that we don't confuse the two issues. I mean, the leaseholders and the cost associated with those lease holdings are a very minor part of the shellfish program cost, and hopefully we can get the leases figured out and then move on to this program cost recovery that, you know, we are committed to. And like you've heard people talk that, you know, we even have legislators willing to help us move more towards a fee for service, whatever we need to do to get to that program cost. But let's get these lease templates figured out. So in general, we agree with the department's proposal on the lease templates. I think you've heard the one concern might be for the low or entry-level people. You know, I'm an established, I've been at this 28 years. I have some of the highest performing leases in the state. Those rates are not a problem for me. But for someone like Bernard or someone like George who's starting out, that $50 an acre when they might not be able to use at least for 3, 4, 5 months is problematic. And the current template that you have gives you guys the ability to, after 5 years, adjust that. So you're not bound by that for 15 years. So I would advocate for at least a lower entry rate for that lowest level. And then you can always ramp that up in 5 years if the lease is producing. So in general, like I said, we agree with the list template, the terms, the renewal. We have some more detailed issues that I would like your leave to be able to meet directly with council to kind of work some of those details out if you guys can approve the bigger picture, because I think this going back and forth once a month to commission meetings is going to take us a long time and cost us a lot. And I think we could wordsmith and figure out some of the details. You know, we've talked to staff a little bit about that. So that would be what I hope we could do and push to get this done as quickly as possible. On the cost recovery issue, just real quickly, like I said, it was nice to have that clarity that this program cost is for a lot of costs that are not associated with the state leaseholders. Again, you've heard some of these things about the fee for service, the aquaculture registration, having some further gradation in that for the different levels of production, which would really help us out. And we've actually talked to people who are operating on Harbor District leases who are willing to look at this with us. So we have a pretty united front in the industry on that. So that's all I have. One other comment is supporting the growth of this industry can also make this cost recovery easier. You know, we are currently farming in Tomales Bay on half the acreage that was once historically farmed on. If we could open up some of that acreage, we could spread out costs and bring more people and more acres to bear in this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Finger. Actually, we'll have a number of questions, but yes, thank you very much. And I would like to encourage you to do that interaction that you were seeking our guidance to allow you to do.
Yes.
We very much want you to pursue that.
Well, I just realize that in a way, you know, as I've gotten more involved in this, and it's really the commission we're negotiating with and not the department. And we've been doing it in a sort of stepwise process that takes a very long time. But really, in terms of any lease negotiations I've ever done on land leases, we should be just sitting down and hammering out some of these details and let's get it done.
You should be, and I encourage you to do so.
Okay, and we will.
Mr. President.
All right.
Thank you for your testimony. I certainly agree it's taken a long time. I want to follow up on a suggestion you made or an issue you brought up, and that is Commissioner Bayless and I were talking about it. One approach, Mr. President, that might make sense for us to pursue, we've been negotiating with the industry on acreage, you know, water bottom leases. It seems that there's a lot of interest in ad valorem, you know, leases or what did you call them? Production leases, which would need to be created by legislation. Why don't, instead of continuing to negotiate acreage leases, why don't we sit down with the industry and write and draft legislation which we could take, the commission and the industry could take to the legislature together and get them to enact, to get them to pass, that would do that kind of lease instead.
Okay.
We have the ability to do that.
Can I comment on that?
The department looks happy.
Just hang on a second.
That's exactly what we'd like to do, but that's what we want to make sure. Again, the leases, the state leaseholders, as Kirsten kind of pointed out, we didn't really see the detail, are a small part of the program cost. So let's get these – let's not get hung up on the lease rates, because really the cost recovery is in these other venues and this other way of doing it. And we're there with you. We'll do it together and get that done.
Adriana has a commentary.
That was originally part of your staff's recommendation early on, your staff and the Department of Fish and Game.
It would provide much more clarity, frankly.
Well,
and
I want to point out, one of your hearing is us trying to fit a square peg into a round hole here. We just don't have the tools to actually recover costs the way that makes sense to the industry or in a timely fashion. I mean, these proposals, as you see, which we spread the cost as much as we could under the current provisions under statute, but even so, it's not really fairly distributed, and you're waiting until 2027 to break even.
It's ridiculous.
But that's all we can do given the constraints, and that recommendation to go with the industry, the legislature, is the only rational way out of this.
So, Mr. President, I know next to nothing about leases. You and Commissioner Richards are the experts on leases. I have deferred to you guys throughout. However, I do know something about writing legislation. I'm sponsoring three bills in the legislature right now. It is not difficult once what you want to accomplish is clear to write legislation, get it adopted by the legislature. So I'd volunteer to help with that.
Commissioner Sutton, I applaud your commentary. I'm sure you remember that I am a lessor to farming operations. I understand them intimately, and I understand productivity levels and ad valorem sorts of approaches. I agree with Sankey that, given my understanding, and Rick, you may chime in on this if you wish, but given my understanding of the rather Byzantine nature of the way this thing has historically been created, that probably, almost undoubtedly, a legislative fix is the single only way to get us to a position where we can answer the specific concerns that I have heard today, and of course have heard ad nauseum in the past, frustratingly so.
Well, again, I think,
and that I believe are actually very accurate.
Yes.
So you are not telling me anything any different than I understand to be appropriate for market farming operations.
Right.
I understand that.
And I just think because of the way the structure is with the commission's department, we have to separate these two issues. The lease template is one thing and needed to be modernized.
I understand.
Sure. Cost recovery
is
another
issue. It's a separate issue. So okay. I think we are inconsistent. You have another. Please go ahead, Commissioner Bailiff.
How this started when I asked you.
Your microphone. Okay.
It's on.
Good.
Is it anything else you want to?
No, I just
go ahead.
I just so dearly love correcting you when I have an opportunity.
I know, the newbie, right?
Yeah.
So and being that person, as I asked you, Sonkey, and then I turned to Mike, and I was wondering why we weren't addressing the real issue of production rates. Now we all agree it's a good idea, but let's not just pat ourselves on the back. What do we do next, Rick? Go ahead.
Yeah, production rates were actually something that we had hit on, Commissioner Richards and I, because both of us are familiar with it. He leases to things like restaurants that have differences in their dynamics. I lease to farmers.
And
Rick knows that we had an agonizing time trying to figure out how, with the laws that govern all of this, we could do that. Rick, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think we have a couple of dilemmas, and what I want to inject, unfortunately, is even legislation won't necessarily solve the biggest problem. The biggest problem in terms of equity is we have existing leases. You can't, by legislation, go back and change those terms. So that's a big chunk of the problem. The other problem, as you've mentioned, is direct charge for productivity, and which is, I think, the goal of just about everybody that I've talked to in this industry and just in common sense. That can be fixed. But I think if we focus on getting the productivity aspect addressed in legislation and then look at cost recovery, at least in the sense that those things, as I've heard some of the speakers mention, those things that are in effect subject to pay-for-service types of charges outside of the template, we eliminate those as an equitable piece of a new lease. In other words, asking the new lease lessees to pick up the burden without being able to go back to the existing leaseholders or leaseholders who are outside the system. That's another problem. What exists, too, in the state, there is a chunk of leases that have been mentioned that are not covered by the department's program, and that's another piece of this problem. So Byzantine is probably the right word for our problems here.
Can I just make one comment?
Please go ahead, John, and then we have some other speakers.
I think the thing is, if you keep the lease rates fairly low, there is no inequity to these leases that are out there. You attack it from the production standpoint, which is outside of the lease, which is part of the aquaculture registration and those things. That's how you deal with the inequity.
Exactly, John.
Okay. But you're willing to, before he goes, and I know
please,
we want to keep moving along, but you're willing to work with us.
Oh, yes.
On the
oh, yeah.
Rate.
We've
so,
already
so
approached
rather than just, again, right. This dialogue, what do we do next? I'd like to see something on the next, on the June agenda that's addressed this, and we have something moving forward. And Rick, if you can get involved as well, but is there some committee we can form with the industry to have something ready for
well,
us?
Commissioner Sutton raised his hand, foolish as he was, raised his hand to assist us with his extensive legislative expertise.
Well, it strikes me that writing the legislation is the easy part. Agreeing on what it should say
is something different.
Is the hard part.
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
we do have two more speakers. I like to see if we could.
Wait a minute, John. I just want to see that we're going to move forward. You want to hear the speaker before we decide how to move forward? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I'm suggesting we get all the public comments out and then take some action. George,
well, I was just trying to answer Commissioner Bayless's.
Understand. Let's let all the public speakers do it, and then we'll go for it.
George Trevelyan, Paul Weakland. Go ahead, sir. Commissioners George Trevelyan, Grassy Bar Oyster Company on Morro Bay. I operate a farm in an area that has, I took over an old farm that was going out of business and having very serious problems with water quality, and for many decades has not been a viable farm. And it's a very risky business, and I'm at the mercy of everyone upstream from me. And I've lost a lot of acreage. Much of the, as I talked about last month, much of the acreage is prohibited. For many of the months that I want to sell oysters, I'm closed, oftentimes more than 6 months a year. So it's a risky business. I'm not even sure if it's viable. And so these greatly increased rents that have been proposed would increase the risk to me, the risk of me going under. It's already very risky. And so I want to echo what you've just been talking about, the idea of how this would especially help a new person or somebody who's trying to rehabilitate a difficult area. This idea of tying our rents in with our production. This would allow me to get started, and as I grow, as you foster my growth, then I'll be able to return more to you. I know you have to recover your costs. I support that. I think that lower rents, though, are the way to go, and that, but tied more in with our production. Interestingly, in Oregon, which is one of our main competitors and moves a lot of oysters into our markets, they only pay $4 per acre, but they have a higher privilege tax, a higher tax on the oysters. And I don't think our privilege tax has probably been changed in many decades, probably. And so to get that up to date would be really wise. And so I support all your efforts with legislation. Another aspect is the $2,000 inspection fee that you want to charge growers annually. I think that that's way too high for most inspections. Some inspections, yes, if there are pathology work that needs to be done, if the pathologist has to look at a lot of animals, it could run up there $2,000. But a standard inspection where a fish and game biologist comes out, visits maybe two or three farms in a day, why should it? I don't think it needs to cost $2,000 each. I think that's too high. I think you can get that down. I really hope you do. But it could be a variable if it is warranted in some cases. Regarding the lease itself, I think the renewal clause that, and I will end there. Okay. The renewal clause that's in there for renewing a lease when it expires is very weak for the growers. And it's not clear that the fish and game couldn't, even though the grower is in good standing, paying his rent, meeting his production requirements, it's not clear that we're going to get the first crack at renewal. And are we sure we have that right or that privilege? I want to make sure that's strengthened.
Okay. Thank you, George. I'm sorry. We're out of time.
Paul Weakland, final speaker on this.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Where is Dan Richards? Well, this is modeled after the state of Washington, not California. We heard before we want parity, equal to. Are these rents par to the commercial rents in the area, not in Washington? Does the state and the people get or receive a fair return? We are not allowed onto these areas. They are now private property. Do you want to buy some shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some stock in a Mariculture Ponzi Consortium? It is not nice to fool with Mother Nature. Obviously, 0 hour is not here. You're still dragging your feet on a tactical timeline. You've missed another due date. It lacks specifics and is vague. We've heard that. We've also heard that the fellow here is not inspected. His facility has not been inspected. We better push up this inspections. They say there are good years and bad years. Well, it's just like fishing or any business. What is the criteria for failure? Is it viable? No. What guarantees are given? None. What subsidies are there? What subsidies do they receive? 15-year leases. Boy, that's Gucci. I wish I could pay 15 years for my commercial fishing license. Wouldn't have to deal with you people for 15 years. That'd be nice. What are the standards? Well, so far we've heard we still don't have any. Now you say, at this late date, we're going to go to legislation, and we're going to take the control away from you. Equity? No. Inequity is what we have. So again, the people of the state of California are not getting a fair return on this commercial enterprise. We're going to model it after the state of Washington. Well, go up to Washington. You can rent some real nice places real cheap. Why should we be on par with that? Unbelievable. So again, what are the guarantees? None. What are the standards? Oh, we're still working on it. Specifics? They are vague. Have the facilities been inspected? No. Any criteria for failure? None. Is it viable? Not really. But if you want to be attached to the Department of Agriculture and declare a crop loss every year, is this part of the subsidies that they get? You know, what is the truth? Well, again, want to buy shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some stock in a Mariculture Ponzi Consortium? We believe that the antitrust laws need to be enforced, that the Franchise Tax Board and the Board of Equalization need to be well informed of these commercial endeavors. They sure take down the commercial fishermen every year. That is all.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Wicklund.
Commissioners, we're going to lose our quorum at 11:30, and I want to know if you would like, how would you like to proceed? We have a couple of consent calendar items going. You have a decision, not a formal decision on this, but direction on this to be made. And I just want to be sensitive to the time that you have available.
Commissioners, I suggest that what we do is jump to the consent calendar and then come back to this as we have time.
We've had item 21 pulled. If everybody's agreeing with that, I'm proceeding that way. We've had item 21 pulled from the consent calendar. The remaining items, I have nothing. Well, number 23. Paul, do you want to speak on number 23?
Yes,
you have about a minute, Paul.
Commissioners, Paul Wicklund, has this facility been inspected for diseases such as the withering syndrome, the wasting disease? Has it been inspected for the worms, parasites, infestations, like the cibellid worm from South Africa? No, they have not. We've heard before the inspections haven't been being done. Are there any detrimental effects that have been experienced? Yes, there have, but we don't include them in any documents. The failures are pushed aside. So parity again. Fishing license are good for only 1 year. Cost is more than the harvesting permit. Rules of harvesting of kelp, one half kelp bed at a time. What are the standards? Is this appropriate? Again, the landing tax is so low that it makes the return to the people of the state of California nothing. So why is this being allowed? Again, has this facility been inspected? Are there detrimental effects? Yes. Why aren't these being put out forth?
Paul, you got 30 seconds.
And thanks for interrupting. So again, would you like to buy some shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some stock in a Mariculture Ponzi Consortium? That is all.
Your 10 minutes are up. For the record, item 23 is renewal of a kelp bed lease in San Luis Obispo County that's been going on for some time. That's what Mr. Wicklund was talking about.
Okay, go ahead. Do we have any discussion on the consent calendar, or do I hear a motion?
You've pulled item 21.
That's correct.
Yes.
We're so moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second. This is with the staff recommendation.
John?
Yes. Okay, moved and seconded on the consent calendar. Commissioner Sutton moved. Commissioner Bayless seconded. Votes. Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Passed 3-0. Done with the consent calendar. We have number 20, if we want to do that, 21, and finishing 19.
Go ahead.
20 is consideration and approval of Gunner's request for an experimental gear permit to trap brown box crab for commercial purposes. This has been discussed at previous commission meetings. And, Sonke, do you want to add anything on this? I have no other speaker cards on this.
So I go with the department recommendation and move.
Is your microphone? I'm sorry. I know you hate me to do that, but
no, I don't mind. Move the recommendation, the motion.
Yeah, we have no public
John,
speakers.
If you want to read it.
It's true.
Okay. Fine.
Moved.
Seconded. Go ahead. I think you have to read the motion, John.
The motion is to approve the request for experimental gear permit under the conditions that the department establishes and to direct the department to move forward to implementing that gear permit. And that's pursuant to provisions in the Fish and Game Code. We have a motion from Commissioner Bayless.
Second.
Commissioner Sutton is seconded.
Roll call.
Roll call, Jack Bayless.
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton.
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers.
Aye.
Pass 3-0.
Mr. President, just one comment on this.
Please.
I hope that the department, in conjunction with our marine advisor, keeps a close eye on this. It makes me nervous, frankly, to approve, and I realize this is an experimental fishing permit, but it is. I don't want this to develop into a full-blown fishery and over-exploitation before we have a regulatory handle on it, and that has happened so many times in the past. We need to learn from history on this one. So I like the conditions the department put on this permit. I think they're great, and they'll hopefully allow us to keep a handle on the development of this potential fishery and regulate it appropriately from the beginning so we don't have a boom and bust situation.
Yeah, Commissioner.
Commissioner Sutton, if I may, a second, Sonke, I may tee you up here. I agree entirely with your concern. At our last meeting, I was persuaded by the department that this is sufficiently precautionary. Commissioner Sutton and I were engaged in that discussion significantly with the department on those issues. I would agree, Dr. Schumann, that we want to remain vigilant, that this is a precautionary experimental fishery. But having said that, I'm completely in accordance with it. So do we have a roll call? Did we take the roll call? We did. So we're there.
Yes.
So good. We're done. Any further commentary, Sonke? Did you want to say anything?
Again, that's one of the reasons this is a one-year permit and why we have observers. We, like you, have concerns, and we are going to watch this very closely.
So it was clearly a precautionary approach to this model, and I'm satisfied with that. John?
Okay, we have items 19 and 21 open right now, and we need a vote on number 21. How would you like me to proceed?
Adriana?
I wanted to clarify with Sonke, if in order to add a new eyesore to the sport fishing package, we would need to have that eyesore in the Form 399 ready to file by June 7th. Is that feasible?
No. And thank you for bringing this up. Dr. Schumann and I had a conversation in the hallway during the break about how best to handle your interest in revisiting the spotted bass issue that the young gentleman addressed and resonated with you, obviously. A lot of what's on here is cleanup, minor changes that fixing hoop nets, the Alameda Creek thing finally. This issue you're going to take on is likely to generate a significant amount of interest. We would recommend a separate, because of that, we would recommend against tying that to this package and instead noticing a separate rulemaking.
Separate package.
Because otherwise you're going to tangle this up with that.
I like that.
Okay, yes, I am okay with that. Gentlemen, are you okay with that?
So,
okay, good.
So therefore, procedurally, I would ask that you approve of this going to notice with rulemaking and then directing us to come back to you at June meeting with an idea about what a rulemaking and options would be for dealing with the spotted bass.
Okay, do I have that motion then, John?
Well, before we do that, please. We're on item 21, which is request for authorization to publish notice of intent to consider amendments to the sport fishing regulations. Sonke's asking to do this in a separate fashion for the bass, and I get that. We also have one public commenter on this.
You
would you like to have that public commenter speak first before you start taking action?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You said
Mr. George Osborne. Mr. George Osborne in this room, we're going to hold him in abeyance for just a minute, and then we're going to go on here.
George,
TikTok, George. Okay, George, you're starting right now.
Get off the phone, George.
You're speaking on item 21, George.
Thank you.
We're all set.
Fire away.
Thank you, Mr. President.
You now
President
have 30 seconds.
George Osborne, representing Partnership for Sustainable Oceans. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to get dressed and not miss this. The PSO has noted considerable confusion among the general public as to when the South Coast MLPA regulations will go into place. We've heard from numerous anglers that are under the impression that the MPAs have already gone into effect. We believe this misconception has been fueled in part by the 2011-12 ocean sport fishing regulations, which erroneously proclaims that the MPAs will go into effect this spring. The PSO does not believe that the department should be saying to anglers that they should abide by any regulations until they have the full force of law, especially given that the regulations are currently being challenged in the courts. We respectfully request that the Commission and the Department of Fish and Game improve its communications related to the timeline of MLPA regulations going into effect and inform the general public that they are still free to enjoy California's healthy marine fisheries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Osborne. Sankey, do you have any comment on that?
No.
No. Okay. Okay.
Okay,
John.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, where we're at on this is we have a request for authorization to go to notice. We have a recommendation from Sankey that the bass matter be considered as a separate item. Is that correct? And I'm looking at Craig, and Craig seems to be comfortable with that.
Yes.
I'm looking at our staff, and they seem to be nodding their heads and being comfortable with that, too.
So do I hear that motion?
So I'll move to make that motion as listed here in the
okay.
packet.
Authorization to go to notice, having bass be a separate item too. Looking for a second.
Second.
Authorization or motion and second from
roll
Commissioner
call.
Bayless and Commissioner Sutton. Commissioner Bayless?
Yes.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Passed 3-0. Number 19, which is what we were in the midst of.
We're back. Okay, go ahead, John.
Do we need to give more specific direction
for
on the bass?
Yeah.
Or on 19. You want to go back to the aquaculture?
I think we're on 19.
That is 19.
Now. And I think we'll get the bass one taken care of.
Sankey, do you have a recommendation to us how to move forward on this?
Coincidentally, in the package of stuff you have in your binders, on the document that's review of the fees and the costs, at the bottom of this section titled Projected Revenues Through Rents and Other Fees, we have an item called Options for Increased Revenues. And it's a series of things, privilege tax rate and the aquaculture registration fees, some options to tier it and structure it to do a lot of the things you heard from the growers themselves. Of course, that's a legislative thing. We're not in a position to do that ourselves, but we could certainly participate in some kind of a working group to frame up what the legislative fixes to make this distribution of costs more equitable and functional for the industry. We're right there with you. We have some recommendations in your packet. We just would look for this venue to have this discussion.
Thank you, Sankey. Commissioner Sutton.
Mr. President, Sankey, thank you for that. We can certainly anticipate that the legislature will have questions about this. What we're anticipating here obviously deviates, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. President, deviates from the way farms are leased usually. And we would need to, the legislature would obviously want to, whoever carries the bill would want to have answers to questions like, well, how will we actually know what production is in a particular farm in any one year? Do we just take the farmer's word for it? Is there some sort of reporting system that should be imposed or whatnot? They're going to want to have confidence that the system that they are adopting will actually work and will be not subject to corruption and so forth.
Yes, that it is going to be not an easy road to go down. We don't need the the Gulf BP oil spill and the inability of fishermen down there to be compensated for their losses because they were, quote, off the books in a gray economy and had no way to account for their losses because they never accounted for their profits. And that's a rather serious problem. So, yes, there is an issue there.
Chair, could I suggest, I don't know if I'm following the right rules, but I'd like first Rick to opine on this, and then maybe we, from the industry, we can get their position. What I'd like to see us accomplish is just target a workshop where we start talking about these issues. Rather than just go on, there's a lot of balance, as Commissioner Sutton brought up, it has to be done. But first, let's have the workshop. Let's get all the concepts, then report back to us.
I agree with that, Commissioner Bayless. Mike, you are much more informed with respect to the nature of the information and the nature of the process that would appeal to a legislator. Can you shed some light on your thoughts as to how we might structure this so that this subject material could be ready for a legislator's consumption?
Thank you. I agree with Commissioner Bayless. That approach might make a lot of sense. In my experience, legislators like it when stakeholders, in this case the commission and the industry, get together ahead of time, you know, sit around build the round table, sit around it and work out what they want together, and then bring a bill together to the legislature. That way the legislature can anticipate that this won't be particularly controversial, and they'll fall all over themselves to introduce legislation that's brought by a consensus group.
I think what we need to do here is take a step back from the process that we have had for the last 2 years and embrace a new way to look at it. The reason I say that is because the legal difficulties that we have had, our inability to do ad valorem, to do production and volume-based things, that we were trying to get to there and we couldn't do it with the existing law, gets us to a position where right now we look like, what the heck have we been doing for the last 2 years? Well, we've been discovering each other, discovering the individuality of the producers and the distinct differences. And so, therefore, equity has been something that's been pursued here. And we're getting a lot more light shed on how we could put together an equitable arrangement that would work both for the state for the state of California, the people who own those water bottoms, and of course for the industry, because if the industry is failing, then the state of California fails as well.
Mr. President, in the interest of time, can I make a suggestion? Why don't we ask our marine advisor to work with the department's aquaculture coordinator, with Kristen, to put together a workshop under the auspices of the aquaculture committee, to which interested parties would be invited. Not that our marine advisor needs more work. I see a panicked look on his face.
I can take that over.
Adriana can do that. Yeah.
And in which we can sit down and develop the elements of what ought to be in consensus legislation.
I agree with you entirely.
Could I clarify just for a moment? We have a handful of outstanding leases currently. And as we all know, legislation could take some time. And so as staff, I would appreciate some direction on how to proceed in the short term and also while continuing a long-term solution.
That is a very important question, Adriana. Rick, are you going to shed light on that particular question?
Right.
Please do.
Yeah, I think we can address that. I had a brief chat with some of the speakers today about getting together to go through some of the remaining issues on the lease template itself. And I think with some effort and energy there, we get that document in shape and we try to separate, if we can, some of the issues where we can look to legislative solutions. In the meantime, we will have a lease template we can get before the commission to approve so they can adopt something that works for today.
Thank you, Rick. From my perspective, gentlemen, and I've been working on this for gentleman. We desperately need that, and unfortunately, he's the legislative. Oh, there we go. We desperately need that before we go to the legislators. I mean, you know, the lease template has to be fundamentally in place and completely fleshed out and agreed upon by everyone. Because if we're still sort of in the middle of that negotiation, I don't think that works with legislators. So I agree with that.
One more.
I agree with that. That we need to get that template in place.
Mr. President, if I could comment on that briefly. Legislation, as you all probably already know, doesn't need to encompass every single detail of an issue like this. It needs to set the framework, and then regulations can be adopted by the commission under the authority of that legislation to fill in the blanks, to fill in the details.
In this case, the legislation should, in my opinion, should address that area of the law that we currently are unable to address given the current structure of the law. Correct, Rick?
Right. I think you have to, I mean, two levels. If we meet today with industry and work through the lease template, we'll also be identifying, hopefully, those issues that we can agree on in legislation and work in both those arenas together, get both those done so that the lease template is, if you will, more like a holding place, but in real operation, if nothing else
actually
happens.
I agree with you, Rick, but I personally see it not a bifurcated event, but I see them as two separate things.
Yes.
The reason I say that is that I think that we probably can work for consensus on a lease template, but I doubt if we will have 100% consensus on the other part of it. Perhaps if it's genuine ad valorem, we might be able to get that from everybody, because if you're winning, you're winning. If you're not, you're not. I mean, you'd think that you could get there, but I'm not so sure about that.
So I am
sure, however, that we could get to consensus on a lease template.
So can I continue on with the thought, Chair? Why don't we? It's probably going to take a series of workshops.
Oh yeah,
and we can do this. I'm very anxious to hear from industry,
but that's
if
why
they're
it has
open
to
this
staff
before we go,
because they can't wait for one every four
right,
weeks.
Right, so we
can't
can
be doing this.
Can we move forward, John? Before the next meeting, can we at least have an open introduction to industry with staff? You all talk to them and talk about how we can have these workshops. Which ones the commissioners should attend? Which ones should we invite legislative staff to? Over a series of a couple months, we should be able to knock this out, right?
I would think so.
Someone, John, if you could take ownership of this, you or Adriana, and keep Rick close and go for it. Can we just check with industry? Can we bring them back up? Is it appropriate that I ask him to
John wants to come up. Just two quick little points that might help in clarification.
John, you need to identify.
John Fingerhag on Oyster Company.
Thank you.
One, and I hope Commissioner Sutton can hear this, that the ad valorem part of it is not that hard. Most of us already fill out proof of use statements and privileged taxes, so that information is already there. That mechanism is already there for most producers in the state to secure that. So that's a big piece of it. The seed producers would be the only one. The other thing that might be a point of clarification for the leases is you saw a program breakout of program costs there. The only line item we didn't see there is what is the cost to administering the state leases. If we look at that separately and look at the lease rates applicable to administering the state leases, is that $12,000? Is it this? Then
you mean as opposed to the Harbor District leases?
As opposed to all the other $175,000, there's a piece of that that's a shellfish
Understand.
Lease. Let's make sure the lease rates cover that, and that is your equity, because I'm thinking that's going to not be that far off.
And assuming is a very bad idea, but I would believe that we could put all of that together into this package.
Yeah, I just want to get these leases done and out of the way, because you're right. We need to get that done first before we sit down and work on the legislative fix. So, anyhow, those are my two points.
The notes that I have then, Commissioner Bayless, for staff, and Adriana is going to take a big role in this, is to start kicking off with the legislative workshop and involve the industry in that. And our intent would be to do that relatively soon. The other thing that I have here is that we also need to get this lease template in as final a form as we can get. And I am asking if the commission wants to have this on the agenda for approval at June meeting.
I think, frankly, it's imperative to do so. Commissioner Bayless?
I think it's
Wait, hang on a second.
your mics off.
Move forward without delaying the what's currently under the lease stuff. So move forward, but don't let the workshops delay it. And then we should have either an update or what was decided as far as a schedule of workshops.
Okay. Sure. So briefly, after speaking with some of the guys that are here today, it looks like perhaps August may be a more realistic date for adoption, given the comments that we've received and Rick's schedule of being out of the country.
That's fine with everyone. I think that'll be fine with Commissioner Sutton as well.
And the other wild card in this, commissioners, is I don't know what leases are scheduled to expire here that have been.
Yeah. When those come, they come, and we will have to act on them with extensions. Please go.
Okay.
Ahead.
The one area that I'm likely going to struggle with, and I think we all will, unless we understand sort of the dynamic of what you're looking to do, is we're preparing a lease template that has to include rental rates of some sort, all right? So we're going to have to work through that and get that. At the same time, I hear that you want to extract from the lease concept those funds that can be applied to industry generally in an equitable fashion over the entire industry and based on production or fee for service or some other methodology. In other words, it will change what you're getting from the leases that we're working on now.
That's correct.
And so if you understand that there's sort of this is a, like I said, a holding place.
No, we understand that. We haven't had the meetings yet. It's once you have the meetings, a lot of that will come to light.
Okay.
Yeah, the templates are a Band-Aid until we have a long-term solution.
We're only in a holding pattern right now, and I know how frustrating that can be, but I think that's where we are.
Until industry and this commission makes a recommendation, and who knows what those workshops will yield, right? I wouldn't want to opine now what's going to happen, but we get together and we talk about it, and then we move forward. Is that?
Yeah, I think it's. I wish we hadn't had to come to this place right now. It would have been better to have it all done. But I think all of the work that we have done for the last 2 years have brought us to this point. The acknowledgement that the only way to really do this properly is through legislative action, and that's frustrating for all of us. But that's the nature of the laws of the state of California. It's how it works. So. Okay, John?
So I believe we've got direction on this then, a workshop, a lease template, and we'll continue working on this. We don't need a formal vote.
Well, you can't have a formal vote.
That's right. And that was number 19, if I'm remembering right, for the
That's
record.
Correct. Now, for everyone's knowledge, for those people who are watching and for you who are in the audience, we now are below quorum. As Commissioner Sutton has just had left the room to make an airplane. And as a consequence, we now can simply conduct business without taking formal votes.
And we have no more formal votes scheduled.
In which case, I think
there is one other thing.
Why don't you go ahead
two
and
things.
Read off?
Commission follow-up, meeting review, and staff direction. Ignoring the stuff that we just talked about with the lease template and the legislative workshop, we had some direction regarding the MLPA for the South Coast, and we're going to be taking action on that. We have some other notes here that I've got in my book that I don't want to try to go through and catch exhaustively. Yeah. Adriana, I think you've got some notes too, and we're not going to belabor those. We'll continue and move forward with those, including scheduling a teleconference meeting for the week of May 16th.
Okay, you want to do the future meeting
schedule. AGP video, do you guys have this calendar that you can put up for future meetings? It's number 27. We are meeting June 29 and 30 in Stockton. We are meeting August 3rd and 4th in Sacramento. Those are local meetings that won't require traveling for headquarters folks. Then we are scheduled tentatively for September, October, November, and December in Redding, Monterey, Santa Barbara, and San Diego, respectively. We anticipate that may change, and I expect it would make a lot of sense to discuss this further at the June meeting once we see what's going on with the budget.
But and I apologize right now for my being unable to make the September meeting, but the Bighorn River calls.
You've indicated that before, and I'm jealous.
Okay, so are we done?
Yes, sir.
The commission meeting stands adjourned.